Hello everyone, Shannon Gates here, getting you ready for our Survivor South Africa Philippines episode 14 recap with obviously Mike Bloom and the great Liana Boris. Really fun recap, actually, about a kind of, you know, sad episode, but we obviously got into the important stuff, and then also in classic Shannon, Mike, and Liana fashion, did get into a little bit of the frivolity as well. But this is just my warning to you guys that obviously a lot of the episodes centered around a particular word. It wasn't Biostrath, it was a different word, and that was the drama of a lot of the episode. We definitely say that word in our recap, so just warning you guys before you listen that we will be saying that word and it is not censored. But otherwise, hope you guys enjoyed the podcast. Thank you very much for listening, and I will see you on the other side. Hello everyone, and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Survivor South Africa, Island of Secrets. I'm your host, Shannon Gates, here to talk about a very controversial episode, definitely a big episode, episode 14 of Survivor South Africa, Island of Secrets. There is so much to get into. Certainly, the internet has been talking about it at length, so we're going to do that here. So to do that, I have a great panel, I think can discuss this in, you know, really great detail, kind of talk about it in the context of reality TV and just the social dynamics of what we're seeing play out. So first, please welcome the jingle to my bells. Great for two Jews, I think. My Mike Bloom. Mike, thank you for being here.
Of course, Shannon, and let me paraphrase a previous Know It Oz guest and current Australian Survivor contestant when I say, what's up, motherfuckers?
I love how this keeps happening on my podcast. How dare you say that, you horrible person. Get out of the podcast now. Is that how I'm supposed to respond to that?
I've been told many. I mean, maybe this is another comparison between myself and Jacques. I've earned very similar comments from certain people out there on the internet as to what poor Jacques received in person from some of these people.
Okay, that makes me extremely sad. So what a great way to start this podcast. But we did have to bring in someone who always brings a smile to my face, can definitely bring the analysis, but also hopefully a little bit of the fun as well somehow in this very unfun situation. So please welcome RHAP's own Liana Boris. Liana, thank you for being here, and please don't say motherfucker.
Okay. All right. I will do my best. Well, thank you for having me. I'm very excited to talk to the two of you. I was looking forward to this. You know, the season has been so fun. Just a bright, shining light. And then we get this episode. It's like, come on, guys. You know, it feels like watching a car crash, but I do want to look away. But you know what? I'm happy to talk about everything. Hopefully we can find some fun in this. Connect Four, perhaps, can be a bright spot that we discuss, but here I am. Let's do this, motherfuckers.
Okay, so now
yes,
we're all saying
a car crash from a car you only had for a month. Rob just gets out of it scot-free, much like this episode. I'm Liana. I mean, it's all too coincidental that we had you on, because I know this is many comments have been making the rounds across the Survivor community, as Shannon has mentioned, but I feel like one of the biggest ones that at least I've seen as a commonality is, and I'll totally cop to this as well, this might be one of the most Big Brother episodes of Survivor I have seen in quite some time. And, you know, I don't want to turn off too many people who are not necessarily tuned into Big Brother, Shannon included, from specifics. but it seems like, you know, particularly with this season, there's a lot of common themes between season 21 and Island of Secrets in this episode, particularly in the realm of social isolation and, you know, moral righteousness and the like.
Yeah. So let's remove the word Big Brother from this just so we can bring some people back. So let's say that there was a TV show where there were people that were all living together, and there was a very small group that then became socially ostracized. Let's just hypothetically say that that had happened. That is exactly what's going on here. You have essentially this group just ganging up against Jacques because of, I don't know, what I felt was not a particularly strong turn of phrase. I mean, yes, of course he curses. Sure, there's a little bit of a threatening tone to it, but like, he's clearly on the outs anyway. It makes sense. He's in the corner. He's going to fight back a little bit. But just the way that I think the group came together, very much BB21 vibes, because it was just, for some reason, like, one person laid down the law of, we're not going to talk to Jacques. And then everybody else followed suit, which was absolutely insane. I mean, especially like Letitia all of a sudden decided to wake up this episode and start yelling at Jacques, which is absolutely crazy. I also see a little bit of BB19 in here as well, which also had just a lot of social isolation was going on, because essentially it was like a group with like sort of one dictator that decided, no, we're not talking to this person, especially in terms of the yelling. Like, there was less yelling in BB21 than there was in BB19. I mean, there's the classic backyard scene where Raven is just screaming like, woof, woof, motherfuckers. Like, you know, so that sort of
again, and all that's the connecting term, I think.
Exactly. It all like ties in together. So, yeah, this episode was very, very reminiscent, I think, of some of the negative, sort of nasty social dynamics that we see on Big Brother.
But like, as someone who's not a BB watcher, I mean, there were comparable, I think, Survivor, comparisons that people were making, you know, at least to the social dynamics we're talking about, where like one dictator tells people what they can do. Boston Robin Redemption Island is like the obvious one people are talking about, maybe like a coach in South Pacific. Like, we've seen this in Survivor. So why is it so Big Brother? Like, is it because Big Brother is toxic and this was toxic? Like, is it particularly toxic?
Well, yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think what it comes down to is the fact that, you know, there's a difference. I know there's been a lot of comparisons between, you know, South African Rob and Boston Rob, which we'll certainly get into, because right down to the facial hair, it has become more and more prevalent over the course of these past few weeks. But I think where this one differs is that the ostracizing of Jacques is coming from a place of morality, which is a little different from the strategic component that you see a Rob doing. I am simultaneously frustrated and fascinated by what happened over the course of this episode. I believe Redmond coined the term on Twitter as frustinated. So I'm very frustinated with what's going on here, because, I mean, these are, and we talked about this with this season of Big Brother as well, you know, these are sort of, when you get people together and you know, build yourself out as the world's greatest social experiment, there are some side effects, you know, the underbelly of society might be exposed here. And I do think the main difference is the fact that it's not just we're, you know, putting Jacques on the outs because, you know, we don't want to, you know, be in an alliance with him. He might find out else he's threatening, etc. It's more so we're putting Jacques on the outs because we're doing what is, quote, fair and right. And we are the good people and they are the bad people. And so they must be punished by us. I just find this also interesting. You know, I've been reviewing some of my preseason Survivor 39 materials when I went out to set. And one of the players said something really interesting where he said that, you know, you can sit back on your chairs like we are now and make comments about like, you're not playing the game or you're not playing the game this certain way. But it's up to the people on the island to determine what the rules of the game are. And that's what makes Survivor so unique each and every season. And I think what's frustrating people so much is that it appears that the powers that be have determined that the rules of the game for this season are going to be under some sort of Ten Commandments-esque rules of morality and integrity, which is something we're not used to in Survivor, at least for a long time, coupled with the fact that there are certain people in power who are not practicing what they preach.
Right. I mean, I have a very long list here of why I'm frustrated. But for me, it's a bit of a different frustration. It's not that they've decided that you have to play with morality. It's more like they've decided morality is not swearing. And let's be clear, this was not a slur. This was a really contextless, meaningless swear word directed at no one that he immediately apologized for, by the way. But, you know, I don't feel like he needed to in a moral sense. But, you know, in a game sense, you might as well. And it was directed at no one. It was trash talk. And that's seen as immoral. And I think that's what frustrates me, is like how these people sit around and I want to talk about gameplay versus actually believing it. I believe there's a scale that each one of these players is definitely on. We can kind of drill down into that. But definitely some of them believe that Jacques, for using this word, is immoral, and they, for attacking him in a group dynamic, ostracizing him, later, you know, laughing at his ostracization and laughing that he's sad and alone. I mean, to quote again, that's not immoral. And that was what was so frustrating to me about this episode. It's like, okay, everyone makes a culture of the season for sure and a moral code of the season, but this moral code is upside down, where a meaningless word with no cultural history attached to it, directed, as I said, at absolutely no one, is immoral. And being outright mean, like actually mean to someone, is moral and right. And that just, yeah, I rolled a lot. Like, my eyes are sore from watching this episode twice and having to watch that.
Well, I mean, I think in addition to the moral code being upside down, it also comes and goes as it pleases whenever it just serves the people in power. I mean, you know, Nicole is going to talk about loyalty, and yet she betrayed Nathan. You know, I know that was, I guess, a while ago now, but still. So it just feels very sanctimonious, the behavior from them. And so I guess it's just really frustrating to see, just because I do sort of want to go back to what Mike said about, like, the who's using it for strategic reasons and who is just using it because, I don't know, this is how they are angrily behaving on the island. And I do think that there is some people, Letitia, Steffi, for example, that really aren't using it for strategic reasons at all. Rob, more so, probably from the strategic side of things. But it still doesn't make it any less, you know, comfortable to watch.
Yeah. Because I do wonder, like, you know, seeing it here, like, for me, Rob's being very much painted with the same brush as Fa'ula, and I'm seeing it, and I'm a Rob fan, but I'm seeing it from a more game perspective than Rob. I mean, he's like, that was a bad social move. Like, to him, it's all moves, and it's all the game, and as I said, I think it's all a scale, so maybe he is indignant, you know, to a degree, but I think it's much more gameplay than, obviously, someone like Steffi. Nicole, she's, like, so false, it's like you can't even really tell where she stands. Obviously, Mike goes along with it, ends up telling them about his reward steal to demonize him further, but he says to us, you know, I'm using that to kind of create a distraction while I make my move. So there's gameplay within that, and a lot of people just have to kind of feed into it because they're just part of the numbers. And then some people actually were extremely angry, as you said. Letitia and Steffi, I think, are the two main ones, and I think that there was a lot of, I know on Twitter, I was definitely texting my mom, like, is swearing particularly bad in South Africa? And it doesn't really seem like it is. I mean, from my South African culture, I didn't think that it was. In Australia, we certainly are very casual about swearing. So yeah, I think it was just confusion from the viewers, and I think rightly so, of like, why is this such a big deal? How is he being demonized with this? And in a truthful way from some of them, like Steffi and Letitia.
Yeah, well, I know that there's a lot of negativity surrounding it, but the dark, demented sense, my part of my brain kind of laughed at Letitia, this 58-year-old nurse, having to say, I am not a motherfucker. It's just, I don't know.
I thought we were using Mother Jaka. I've been waiting for to say Mother Jaka, but now we're just using the word. But Mother Jaka will be the hashtag, okay? Our entire podcast season has been leading to this moment.
I also just like the fact that Letitia thought that could be her. Jaka was threatening.
Yeah,
like, yes, yeah, Letitia, it's going to be you.
But and look, I'm also going to put out here, I'm sure that the people that we're going to be speaking about are fine people in everyday life. But I will warn in advance, at least from my perspective, I'm going to go in pretty hard on some of these people for the way they've been behaving, or not even on top of in addition to all the frustrating stuff from the moral aspects. There were so many stupid moves happening this episode that I'm sure we're going to get into as well. But God damn it, Steffi, just God damn it. From, you know, her, like, I love when we have later on Rob saying confessional of like, you have to worry about your social game. Cut to Steffi being like, you are going to lose every single day of your life. You're going to wake up a loser, Jacques. And that's you. And then she talks in confessional about, like, Jacques, the way Jacques is talking, he's arrogant, he's cocky, he's patronizing. Cut to, like, 5 minutes later, her being like, yeah, you know, I had to go to Island of Secrets because, you know, I had to make sure that Mamba didn't get the advantage because, as we know, I'm the best competitor around. Cut to 5 minutes later when she loses to a goddamn 10-year-old's game. Steffi's just really, she's getting on my last. I know I said that she was a villain, that I was eagerly waiting for her downfall to happen, but now I'm sort of like fearful of her going before the finals, because it's sort of like, would you rather have her in the game being this hypocritical self, or would you rather have her be the most bitter jury member ever and possibly sway the jury towards an outcome that we don't want? Pick your poison.
Ugh, no, I would rather have the jury tear her apart. Like, that's what I would like to see at this point, because I think now I've sort of like crossed that threshold where it's like, okay, no. Now I don't want to see her in the jury anymore. Like, now I want to see people go in on her. And it's so frustrating because Shannon, on our podcast in the preseason together, I picked her as my winner. And now I have to live with this every single episode. So, oh my gosh, when she's just like, as Mike describes, this crazy, insane, and completely over the top woman. And I'm like, God.
Yeah. I was okay. Like, who did Liana pick again? So I went back and listened 20 minutes ago, and I was like, Steffi, great episode for that. Look, I know you guys are frustrated, but, you know, Steffi actually really did get what was coming to her this episode. You might have missed it between all the ugliness, but she did in fact scull a whole bottle of Biostress, and we didn't get to see how that turned out because we just saw them sculling it. I'm sorry that Marba had to be collateral damage. A lot of bad things happened to Marba in this episode. This might have been the worst. Believe me, Mike, we know she sculled that bottle and it was hard, okay? So if you're thinking, wow, I would love for Steffi to be cut down a little bit by what she's done to Jacques, she's taken her medicine, literally, and figuratively. She's more than suffered enough. So I loved
just like my running dialogue through my notes was, you know, cutting to the Island of Secrets table, seeing like, oh, that's a nice spread. What is that doing in there? Why is Biostrat there? And then Steffi, not exactly the beacon of advice concerning what we're going to talk about with her vote from the previous tribal council that I think unfortunately blew up a bit of the greatly crafted fan fiction that Shannon made last week.
We'll see.
Like, oh, Mamba, you can have a cap. No, just down the bottle. And considering our reactions from a few weeks ago to one cap of that thing, I'm very surprised neither one of them were medevaced at that point for guzzling an entire bottle of that brown monstrosity.
Yeah, I mean, look, there were a lot of, like, pretty nauseating parts of this episode, and this one takes the cake. Like, this was the worst part, and there was, like, emotional trauma happening, and I know what I said, you know?
I like the fact that Biostrath is a reward here, whereas we're treating it like it's some sort of punishment. Like, talk about the gross food eating challenge. Throw some Biostrath up in there.
Now we're treating Biostrath like how they treated Jacques, which I feel bad about. And I have in my notes here, the situation is what I have. And then I have eye roll moments. And these may have been my longest notes ever. Like, it went over two pages, the eye roll moments that it was just, they were low laughing within earshot of him. That was so painful to me. And one of the things that two of the things actually that made me the most sad was that the first thing is that, as I've said, I don't think Jacques did anything wrong. But then after that, he immediately apologizes and he's just like so defeated. He literally immediately apologizes as they all scream at him. So that made me sad. And then the part that made me really sad, as I now just go through just my list of grievances, this is just like a rant session right now, but he says, I'm sad because I'm not that person out of the game. And I'm like, Jacques, you're not what they're saying you are in the game either. Like, I hope he didn't get to a point where he thought he crossed a line because he absolutely didn't. And, you know, as a game move, apologize, as I've said, but I really hope Jacques didn't get to the point where he was buying into what they were saying in or out of the game, that he was this, like, bad person by any means, because all he did was use a swear, which we've used like a million times on this podcast. Like, it's so meaningless.
Well, let's talk about this because I would say that while, yeah, Jacques' intentions, I don't think, you know, were out of any malice whatsoever. I will say the choice of what he did, I could see from, like, you know, I think Rob said later on he wanted to be a Bond villain. I don't know if he wanted to, you know, necessarily paint himself as the big evil guy. I think he more so wanted to be a bit braggadocious and say, like, look, you got to work with me or I'm going to take one of you out. You know, I think he was able to do a bit of a flex with the idol. I'm assuming riding off the high of that excellent non-play that he did. Though I think what Steffi did or confirmed that she did also confirms what you were talking about last week about how Jacques got pretty damn lucky that him not playing his idol paid off pretty well for him. And I think from what I've been seeing across the internet, especially from Rob himself, responding, and like you said, maybe this is a difference between how he felt about stuff versus how Steffi and Letitia took it. He seemed to take it more from the perspective of our old favorite friend, content versus intent, of like, yeah, the word wasn't that bad, but the fact that he, you know, said it in such like a big manner really maybe added fuel to the fire and made that was the more incendiary point instead of just throwing in the word itself. Because yeah, people can use it as a filler word. I'm sure we've had many Survivor contestants. I was raised on Sandra Diaz twine, so I feel like it's a fairly innocuous word, but I guess they felt like he was using it as a weapon, even if he wasn't, and that's what I think really grinded their gears. Though again, Rob is someone who did not take the most offense to it. He was the one who made the strategic play of it and said, okay, let's not talk to Jacques from now on. Instead, you have someone like Nicole who says, yes, do it. We need to not do that move because it's fair and right, which makes no sense to me at this point.
Yeah, those are like two of the quotes that I have written down where Rob is saying, okay, no one talked to him one-on-one, just sort of like, yes, social ostracizing, but also like at least there's some strategy there. And then Nicole follows up, it's being fair and right. Like, what?
How is I keep rolling my eyes. Like, we need to stop. I'm like, my eyes are in pain.
Well, okay, all right, let's try to save Shan's eyes for a brief second. Let's just think strategically about if you're Jacques in this situation, what is it that you should do? Okay, so you just have this brilliant bluff idol play at the last tribal council. You're coming in, you know 100% that you're on the outs. What do you do in this situation? I mean, I actually liked this move from him, just if you think about what it, essentially he was trying to do, which was like, look, I know I'm on the outs. I'm going to play my idol in this next round. So I will be safe regardless of what happens. So the onus is now on you to come like work with me to try to come up with something because you don't want it to be you going home. So I do kind of like that play. Although then it, you know, still, even if they didn't do the complete social ostracizing that they did, it still would allow the powers that beat Rob, for example, to then, okay, fine. I got a bunch of other targets I need to get rid of before I get to the final two anyway. To then let him still pick. So I guess, I don't know, I guess I'll open up this question to the two of you about what you think, really, what Jacques should have done in this episode if it's not this whole, hey, look, I'm playing the idol, come talk to me type deal.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem with Jacques is that, you know, he's trying to get people to work with him. But the thing is, if he doesn't use the word Mother Jacques, it's going to be something else that they use against him. Like, it was clearly an excuse, you know, and they say, oh, we were taking him high fives and stuff. And then he used this word and then, you know, he was dead to us. And that's probably not the case. Like, he would have done something else to offend them in some way. We also would have found, you know, completely meaningless and he would have been ostracized again. So I feel like it's a really hard pathway for him. They even say like, oh, you know, he could have redeemed himself after this, but he just went further down south. It's like, redeemed himself from what? What had he possibly done even before this?
Steffi, he didn't need to redeem himself. He wasn't someone who, like, I don't know, ran over your pet with his car. He was someone who's like said a statement and immediately apologized for it. I don't know why this makes you think like he burned bridges. And
no, but again, she was saying he needed to redeem himself from even before that. And he could have redeemed himself before he said the word. So exactly, he hadn't even done literally anything that could be misconstrued before he even said this. And they were still looking at it like he, you know, we've said it for the last few weeks. There's been this culture building kind of slowly where he's been completely demonized. And it just exploded in this episode in a really ugly way. But it wasn't out of nowhere. Like, it's been building for a couple of weeks.
Oh my gosh, yeah, like, maybe the purple in his hair, since it's now slowly finally going away, that was like his shield or something. We need to find Jock some purple paint.
He had a paint shield. I mean, it's like, oh, you had to redeem yourself from saying you would play your idol last round and not playing it. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that was a lie, like saying you would vote for Jacques, but then deciding for some reason in the moment that you had to vote for Kubis and sending somebody home. And then getting outed for that at that tribal council and basically becoming an even bigger laughing stock of the jury that you are now. She astounds me in so many ways. I just cannot get over Steffi.
Wait, actually, can we go back for a second? Okay, so like, Steffi's like, I made the biggest rookie mistake when it comes to flushing an idol. I wrote the wrong name down because I flipped. But wasn't the vote 5-2-2?
Yes.
So
thank
was
you,
it
Leon.
Supposed to be 5-3-2?
It was meant to be 3-4-2, but instead it was, so that's the thing, is that we'll talk about it, how my fanfiction was totally wrong, and she does seem to be saying, she said she made a mistake based on hearing her name, so it does sound like maybe it was that emotional decision based on people, you know, maybe flipping against her, even though I now think there was never a chance of a flip. Mike and Doral were never ever doing it, and we'll definitely talk about it because I'm more critical about that from Mike's perspective than Doral's perspective. I want to talk about them flipping and not flipping across this week, last week, and all the weeks before that, but it doesn't make any sense because even if Steffi had voted correctly, it still would have been the majority on Kubis 4-3-2, so I mean, I don't know. I guess she is a laughing stock, but someone else must have switched their vote, maybe under Steffi's instruction, maybe someone like a Nicole, if it was meant to be, you know, women on Jacques, like, because Marb and Letitia ended up voting for Jacques, and maybe men on Kubis. I mean, I know this is just going with the fan fiction, but the numbers just really don't make sense that it was just Steffi who screwed up her vote. So there's something in this vote that we truly don't understand, I think.
Yeah, this is the biggest mystery vote of the season that I think continues to be. That this is the one secret vote in the Island of Secrets that, once again, like other secrets, we don't necessarily know about. Going back to Liana's question, it's tough because I could see from Jacques' perspective why you want to be so overt to really hammer in people's heads, like, I can work with you, come over to my side. I think the issue with his little talk after the tribal council is almost part and parcel with what he does at tribal council, which part of it I really liked. I actually really liked when he did the Ben Dreeburger and really just sort of you know, put allayed any sort of questions of, oh, is he going to keep his idol again? And he essentially pulled like one amigo, ironically against the amigos, by saying, you can't vote for me, so you have to vote for one of you. I think the issue in both cases is that maybe he was a bit too overt about it, because like you said, it provides a really easy opportunity for people to be like, yeah, Jacques just said this, don't do that or you're going home. You know, you're providing very little room in the mist for people to come talk to you. Now the mist has completely cleared. And it's a similar situation where, again, I liked what he did in making himself safe. But I think one of the, you know, the major problem that I think people attribute to the Three Amigos Tribal Council, as entertaining as it was, is that if they established their target from the very beginning, and that allows the numbers to just very easily organize and say like, okay, we can protect Rob. Great, let's just throw our votes onto Maba. If Jacques had just instead said, okay, I'm voting for one of you. You know, it's almost like what Mike Holloway did in Worlds Apart. I'm like, hey, I'm going to play this idol on Shireen, and I'm going to be voting for somebody else. He was able to expose, you know, Tyler and Will voting for Dan in that moment. I think providing, you know, stating your intention by still providing an air of mystery is a good happy medium to strike. And I do commend Jacques for being, you know, so aggressive about it, but maybe it was a bit too aggressive.
Here's why I don't think that it worked. And it's more just, you know, to say how great the majority, especially Rob, is doing, you know, other than Jacques doing anything particularly badly. I mean, I think he did really well, you know, in terms of the attempt, you know, trying to stretch out this idol for so long, which he did, trying to make something happen when he's literally not allowed to talk to anybody. And also under those like emotional circumstances, I thought was really impressive. But the difference between this and like the Three Amigos Tribal Council, for example, is that I think the pecking order is much more defined. And even Worlds Apart, much more defined than that as well. And everyone is kind of okay with it. And well, at least the majority is. So Ulla know they're in the three. Darrell knows he's at four, and we'll talk about his plans, but I think he's fine with that. And Letitia, I feel like, knows she's right around five, and then Marv and Mike didn't know what was happening, but five is a majority of eight. And I think what we need to talk about, and we don't talk about it enough, and I know I went on a rant a couple of weeks ago, and I'm so glad I did, because Letitia is the biggest wild card this game has ever seen. She is so crucial to the majority keeping their numbers, because she has, you know, no killer instinct. She's not going to flip with Mike, but she also has no self-preservation. She's just kind of like, I think, plodding along. And if I'm wrong, based on, you know, what I've seen, okay, maybe I am. But from what I'm seeing, she's happy to be the decoy boot. You know, you can tell her straight to her face that she's the decoy boot, and she's happy to do that. In her voting confessional, she says to Maba, it's either you or me. So she's happy to know that she's a possible option and go with that. If she's almost anyone else, then there's a very good chance that when Jacques is playing his idol, she says to Maba, whispers to Maba something like, look, you and Mike think it's me. I think it's you. And Jacques is on the outs. That's a four. Now you're still going, you know, against a four with idols. It's still tough. But that's like an actual contingent of people that could work. But I think Letitia knows she's kind of around the middle. She's happy to kind of serve her purpose. And she makes up a majority of five that know the pecking order. So you just take the next one out of the pecking order, Marble or Mike, right? Like, I think in those other situations where people have idols, the block of people is just, well, at least from what we saw, not as clearly defined. So you don't know which one to pick off next. But in this one, it just seems like such a ladder that everyone is aware of.
So in terms of Letitia being a wild card,
she
I think
is.
That's just from the view. Oh, but I think that that's just from the viewer's perspective. I have to imagine that on the island, like, they know, they feel confident, the amigos feel confident enough in Letitia that she is just going to go along. They know that she has no self-preservationist elements to her. They know that she's just going to vote with them. They totally see that she's okay with being the decoy vote. So I think to them, they feel like she, you know, is maybe another Darrell. I mean,
no,
maybe bringing less.
No, I do. Sorry. So to clarify, I think she's definitely going to vote with him, and I think they definitely know that. I just think what makes her a wild card is she's someone the minority members didn't know where she stood. She's someone they always factored into their flip vote plans, because, like, why would Letitia not flip? You know, she's not going to the end, but why she's a wild card is because, does she want to get to the end? Like, what are her aims in this game? I think, so from the majority's perspective, I think they're completely right. She's a solid, consistent, almost too comfortable number from where she should be. But what I'm trying to say is, from the minority's perspective, and thus from the viewer's perspective, every single time you're like, well, will Letitia be in the numbers? And she's been crucial to every single flip attempt, and she's never going to flip, and she's also not going to go to the end, and she also does not care. And that makes her a wild card to me.
So if that's, I mean, that's a good point. So in that case, should we be giving her as much ire as people have been giving people like Mike and Darrow, who have been in very similar positions, but we've actually seen them take the information back to Rob? Is it just because the fact that, you know, they rat out that information, it makes them more vilified by the community than someone like Letitia, who is in essence doing the same thing in deciding not to flip? And she talks about a tribal council, you know, the, oh yeah, I'm sticking to the deal that was made. And then Shock very keenly points out, yeah, two people from that deal are currently sitting on the jury bench. So, you know, that's a nice little fun little spigot of hypocrisy there. And Letitia's speaking there. But it seems like she's another person that's going to stymie those flips as well. But is it just because we don't see that much of her actually going to people and telling them about the plan that she's earned, you know, a little bit less focus than some of those other players?
Yeah, it's sort of like the difference between like, well, this person's not trying versus this person is trying, but they're doing a very bad job at it. You know, which one deserves more criticism? So I think that's probably just a difference of opinion. I think it's more frustrating to me to see somebody try and then mess it up. But at the same time, like, my God, what even is going through Letitia's head? Which especially, Mike, I'm so glad you brought that up. The thing at Tribal Council where she was like, I'm just hoping the alliance that I made before merge will stay strong. It shocks. Like, have you seen the jury? Like, those alliance members are sitting over there. Oh, that was so good. That was so funny.
Look, I'm more frustrated with Letitia, if you couldn't tell from the fact that I think I was just banging my fist on the table. You can probably hear it in the recording. And I just, for me, I'm thinking about players. She's just an unplayable person to work with. She's someone who's just, it's impossible because someone like Mike is thinking, probably, you know, he's erroneously thinking that she would work with him because you're not in those people's plans. But it's like, this person doesn't have, you know, you have to think about, what does this person want? How does the game look from this person's point of view? And for her, it's just like shrug emoji, you know? So like, that's such a hard person to play with. That's so frustrating from a viewer perspective, because there's not even any good reason. It's like, well, why didn't Darrow flip? And we'll talk about it, but I think there are reasons. You know, why didn't Mike flip earlier? He may have been wrong, but he thought he had numbers. Why didn't Letitia flip? There is no reason. She just doesn't want to. She just wants to go with the plan, and eventually it'll be her turn, and she'll say thank you very much, and she'll take her torch, and she'll go to Ponderosa. And yet, like, I get it. She's not a super fan listening to this podcast, and I get it. She's not the person that I can understand in the game who's there to, like, play it super strategically, but I'm just frustrated, I guess, for people on the island who have been like, and Letitia will vote with us, and she just was never going to. She was just going to do the thing she was going to do, and then she was just going to leave the game, and I clearly am very frustrated by that.
Maybe Letitia is some mastermind, you guys, social mastermind. She has everyone snowed that she's definitely on their side. I don't know. Maybe Steffi and Nicole have promised her a final three with, you know, all women.
Anyone can win against Steffi and Nicole. So that's actually a good bet.
I was going to say, we are going to see, you know, apparently some stuff happen next week. We'll talk about it. I don't know if it's going to come to fruition. But yeah, that's the thing. You brought up a great point that as much as we might be decrying some of these people's games, the fact of the matter is, I think if they're sitting next to pretty much any two of the amigos, there's a very good chance that they win, given the makeup of this jury.
Yeah, and maybe Letitia does have a plan. Like, I think Darrow could have a pathway to the end, which I've now alluded to many times. I want to talk about it, but maybe she does. And I think what just frustrated me the most is just like, again, so happy to be the decoy boot where, you know, idols will be flying around. That's one thing. And then just the voting confessional where she's like, I guess it's you or me, Mubba. Shrug emoji makes me think that she's not exactly like exactly biding her time to something diabolical and is maybe just like what will be. And that's just, it's so hard to play with.
You're anticipating Letitia's big move.
please don't traumatize me with the marketing. I like Australian Survivor's marketing much more recently, but yeah, I mean, it could happen. And we talked about, you know, last season and Tom and everything. Anyone can win. Letitia can win, but I think there just needs to be a little bit more self-preservation from these people. They're working around with some difficult players. And I mean, I want to talk about, as we've said, Mike and Darrow. We can kind of, you know, circle back to this tribal council because they were both doing things at this tribal council. But Darrow, let's talk about him. He makes a final four deal in this episode. And people are very mad because he goes back to Rob and he's his little spy and he's now like ruined the flip. But I don't hate it for Darrow because I'm thinking,
thank
look,
you.
Darrow's going to go to the final four with Rob, Steffi, and Nicole. That's what he's planning. I don't even know if he's thinking this, but this is what I'm saying. That there's like a 5 to 10% chance that they literally do just slip on Rob because it's so obvious. Verna style. I'm giving it 5 to 10%. I mean, who can say? But there's got to be a chance that they all look at each other like, we would be idiots to take this like obvious godfather to the end. And if they vote out Rob, I think Doral wins. So in that plan, Doral has like a 5 to 10% chance of winning Survivor, and that is legitimately crazy and something worth applauding, I think.
I could not agree more. I totally see that, like, it's not a good look, and especially from what we've been built up of, oh, you know, Mike was finally organizing this vote. Finally, you know, this game that had been going a bit slow the past couple episodes is finally going to pick back up, and then Doral goes to tell Rob. And we can certainly talk about the idol gifting and regifting in a bit as well. But I think, quite honestly, one of the best positions to be in the game right now is in a Final Four with the Amigos. Because I could see an opportunity, Shannon, where Steffi and Nicole do say, wait a minute, we definitely cannot go to the end with Rob. Nicole says in this episode, yeah, we're all working together, but there's one of us who's coming across like the Godfather. And I think she's alluding to Rob there, though. God only knows with Nicole. She might be referring to somebody else. But I think, yeah, exactly. But I think that, you know, that's going to be a double-edged sword when it gets to the finals. And it's like, oh, yeah, Rob made all the decisions. Let's vote for Rob. So I think Doral can go in from that perspective. He could win immunity as well, which could be another perspective. I'm sure he could also convince Rob of, like, you know, I think he has endeared himself so much to Rob at this point that maybe he could be like, hey, you know, Nicole made some moves. Remember, she voted out Nathan. Hey, Steffi won a couple of immunities. Do you think the jury is going to give her credit for that? And he could, there's room to play there, much like I would think anybody who's sitting in the Final Four with those Amigos is in a good spot. Because if you just get one more spot into the final three, you're sitting next to two of the three people who need to sit next to each other in order to win this game. I'm firmly of the belief right now, and I'm happy to be proven wrong because I don't want a concrete endgame at this point, but I firmly believe, yes, including Rob, which is really unfortunate because we'll get into what he's doing. He might be playing one of the most fascinating Survivor games I've seen in quite some time, but I really do think the Amigos can only sit next to each other to win the game, just because there is so much resentment built around what they're talking about and the way they're going about it at these tribal councils that they're going to be lambasted by the jury. And as a result, anyone sitting next to them is going to have the votes pile in. So whether it's Doral, whether it's Mike, whether it's Letitia, I feel like you got to be at spot number four. Doral even tried to offer like a final three deal with
they
Rob
pretended
and
not to hear.
Yeah, exactly. And I will also say that, yes, I don't think it was a great look that Doral immediately went back with Mike's plan to Rob. I will also say that Mike tried to include Nicole in this plan, and I do believe that if Doral hadn't gone back to Rob, Nicole definitely would have. So I think, unfortunately, poor Mike's plan was pretty much blown up from square one with the people he chose.
Yeah, so, okay, there's a lot to unpack here, Mike, with all of that. So I think I'm going to go back first to the Doral move. I agree with the two of you. I think this is the best move for him. I don't know if Doral necessarily knows why this is the best move.
He definitely does not.
Not.
Yeah, okay, all right, good. Maybe he needs to go to the Island of Secrets and get a little parchment that's like explains it for him. Maybe
yeah, like a love letter from Mike.
Turtles.
But he's going to be like, you know what? I'm going to wait to read this. And it gets dark. He's like, oh, no, I forgot to read it. Now I'll never know.
What am I going to do? How am I going to memorize that? Oh, my gosh. The Doraliest Doral moment ever. Anyway. Yeah, it's just like it's so crazy. A far cry from when Doral was like had food stuck on his face all the time and like forgot he was lactose intolerant and drank a bunch of milkshakes. Like, it's just so crazy that now we have Doral in this situation where there is a chance that he could win. Although, you know, considering last season, I guess maybe I shouldn't be so surprised.
Yeah, this would be the so Tom anyway. Win 100%. Like, not in the same way, and the season isn't the same, like, kooky insanity, clearly, so it wouldn't really fit the vibe as well, but it would definitely be the Tom win.
Yeah, oh my gosh, for sure. So, yeah, so there's Doral and his move, and then, I mean, my God, like, the control that Rob has, maybe it is just his ability to find those people who will be so loyal, to have Doral, to have Letitia, and to really have those people in his back pocket, and just the amount of control that he has. I mean, my God, those eyes, if we could somehow, like, bottle up whatever type of charisma is there and sell that, I mean, we would be millionaires, because it's just so fascinating to watch his control over this game. And I kept thinking, like, okay, his downfall's coming. Like, we have Mike here, like, we have Jacques, something will happen. And no, here we are sitting at now the final seven with final seven, final six.
Yeah, seven.
We're about to go into seven.
Yeah, about to go into seven. And Rob is still just has such control over the game. It's amazing.
Well, pulling in Doral, I think we've said it a few times, but that ended up being so important. The way he really just like took him away from Jacques and Felipe at the time, and he's, you know, Gerald considers him his closest ally. I wonder how many of these people consider Rob their closest ally. I mean, the way he inspires loyalty in people is incredible, and the social game, you know, you might say not for Jacques, but is really on point. I mean, the ostracization that he was doing where he was like, no one can talk to Jacques, that's right out of the Boston Rob playbook, you know, and it's not pretty, but it's definitely, you know, from a game we would call one of the best winning games of all time in Boston Rob. And look, last week, I did not fully understand what he was doing with his advantage. I mean, I kind of was like, well, when will the producer tell him? I was like, it must be like after in a confessional. So like, you just find out afterwards that you know, who voted for who, why would that be relevant? Now I understand. So the advantage really, if you think about it, still makes like no sense, because it's so dependent on voting order. Like Rob doesn't even vote last. So it's like, what if he wanted to know, I think Steffi voted after him. Like, what if he wanted to know her vote? And he goes up to the voting urn and it's like, he's going to go vote and he wants to find out Steffi's vote so they can, you know, his vote can be dependent on it. And then she hasn't voted yet. It really makes no sense, but it worked. The way that he used it as a bluff was incredible to watch. It actually sounds like a really cool and fun, as just strange werewolf / mafia style advantage. But I love the way he took it to Mike, because he took it to Mike as if he was kind of like using him as a strategic sounding board. He's like, I'm going to check Marba, because he knows that's like Mike's closest ally and that'll freak Mike out. He doesn't say, I'm going to check you, Mike. Like, he's not, you know, actually threatening him. He's like, what do you think? I'm going to use my advantage, just kind of bouncing ideas off you. And the other one, I'm not sure. I'm going to see how tribal council goes. And it's like, oh, that's terrifying. So now it's left open. And it's like, it doesn't seem like he's trying to terrify you. It sounds like he's just revealing his plan to you accidentally. I mean, Mike seemed happy, like, oh my God, thank God he told me. Otherwise, I would have done the plan and I would have been screwed. So he makes Mike think that Mike's 3 steps ahead, but he's actually 10 steps ahead. And he actually was trying to terrify you on purpose, but he did it in this like brilliant way. I was in awe of the way he ended up using an advantage that I didn't get last week, kind of laughed at last week, was like, is this necessary? It was very necessary. Like, what an unbelievable job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love this move. And I think what I didn't think about last week is how much it works in tandem with him having an idol.
Yes.
And I know, Shannon, you and I were talking about offline. I think we're still not entirely sure who knows that Rob has an idol, but it works so well because essentially what Rob is doing is basically saying, like, inferring, hey, Mike, if you try to vote for me, I'll see that you and Maba have votes against me and I'm going to play my idol and then I'm safe and your plan is screwed. And it's just such a great way to go about it. Like you said, so casually, but it really does spook Mike in the direction that he wants to go. I also think, you know, this is yet another reason why I feel like maybe his mentality of the game is a bit different from Steffi and Nicole, is because like we see him almost like gleefully talking about how he was able to dupe Mike here, and not so much about like, it was the right thing. You know, how dare Mike go against me? The best person in the game who's trying to be the most integrous. You know, I want to make sure that I spook him a bit. It was just a pure game move, and I absolutely loved it. Though I do wonder, if Mike's signal to Durao to do the plan was Jingle Bells, did he have another song for how to undo the plan, and an abort song?
Is that different? Yeah, Christmas jingle?
Silent Night. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah, but that was, what an awkward like segue. Guys, yeah. If you get off this island, it's only gonna be 9 months until Christmas.
That's so long until Christmas. Like, that's, I mean, I'm being Jewish, I don't know the anticipation for Christmas. Is it something where like literally in March you're like, oh my God, that's way
it
too far away.
It does every year. Yeah, it gets earlier. It used to be at Thanksgiving, now it gets earlier and earlier and earlier. So maybe in Mike's head, I don't know. But can you imagine?
I just love the fact that it was not only that, but the fact that he made it a sing-along too. Yes. Like, okay, Durao, you're along with the plan. I'm going to start a big old campfire rendition of Jingle Bells. You better join in an A-flat minor if you want to go in on this plan, Durao.
So funny, because Mike turns and gestures to Durao, like, Durao, bring it out, buddy. Yeah. So good.
Yeah, and when Durao tells Rob, he's like, yeah, he said that, you know, if we're going to go with the plan, we should sing Jingle Bells. And Rob just like accepts that incredibly random and crazy bit of strategy from him, which maybe there's context we're missing, but it was random. It was extremely random.
Well, that actually does remind me of Big Brother also, because there's been some signals in Big Brother of whether or not a vote flip is going to happen. Like, say the word Brussels sprouts.
Yeah.
So, wear my hair up or wear my hair down.
For my genius fans out there. Sangmin, and he's just like, when, you know, instead of just like giving a cue, he does like actual whole dances. That's what this was, but in like Survivor
terminology. What it was, it was like the gestures, right? Of like, okay, if I do this, it means roll a one. If I do this, it rolls a two. I just love
But the third gesture was him literally dancing.
Yeah, like I just love the charades and songs that happen. I don't know. This might be the goofiest signal that I think I've ever seen on Survivor in quite some time since Jonathan Penner went to the voting booth and yelled Denise at the top of his lungs.
Yeah,
I mean, so funny. They should have done Rocco's like celebration dance just because I want to see that more on my screen.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so Mike was doing a lot in this episode. Let's talk about Mike, because I'm disappointed that I feel like he's so much more on the outs and lower down on the pecking order than I realized. And then I think, you know, that he realized. I mean, I think it was Nicole at some point, I have to go back to my eye roll section, who said it's like, he's trying to change it up for no reason. It's like, the reason is that he's number six in your tribe of eight that's about to be seven. So he's kind of trying to get away from that, Nicole. He's not actually playing for you to win. I know that must be a shocking thing. Sorry, my eyes again are hurting me, but...
Yes. Well, yeah, that's what Rob does something similar to Tribal Council, where he's like, I don't believe in changing things. I just believe in further strengthening the bonds I already have. Yeah, because you're in a great position.
Because
yeah,
you're winning the game.
No reason to unless you're Tony, there's no reason to change things if you're in a good position.
Well, I felt that this episode was actually very Mike focused, because when the berating of Jacques is happening, you actually get a lot of shots of Mike looking very disheartened, which I thought was pretty interesting. So it looks like he's being he's disapproving of the behavior, but then he does go and tell the rest of the group about Jacques' reward to sort of further distance Jacques, I guess, again, like he says, to put another distraction out there so he can like go and do his work. But I agree with you, Shannon. I didn't realize like how little power he had really until this episode, where it became abundantly clear that like he was very much on the outs and this plan was definitely not going to work.
Yeah, I mean, it's such an interesting perspective from, you know, not just Mike, Marba as well. And Marba gets to Ponderosa. We see her being like, Jacques really did nothing wrong. But they can't speak up, obviously, in that situation. And in fact, Mike actually needs to make it worse to work for him. And, you know, you can always say, okay, well, the people doing the bullying are the worst, you know, are bad. And the people who watch it and do nothing are as bad. But in Survivor, it is a game for, you know, a million rand. There isn't a lot that they can do with no power. They really just have to sleep in the shelter. Jacques is by himself in the hammock. And I'm sure that really did feel terrible. I mean, we've said, you know, the game has done things to these people, but it really does seem, as Mike said, he said in this horrible situation, just be nice. He said that last week, and I don't think that he bought into this at all. I mean, I'm speculating, but he said it's everything he was doing was a game move. He wants to be nice in the game. That's his primary strategy. And there he is having to just basically blend into the group mentality against Jacques, which I'm sure was absolutely painful for him. And to look at, you know, we find out how little power he has in this episode, in that Letitia doesn't want to flip. Doral doesn't want to flip. Those are a few of the numbers he was working with. He basically just has Marba. He's trying to work with Nicole, which seems crazy to us on our couches because we know how much Nicole is in with Saula. So it's crazy that was a number he was trying to use. And to kind of see it now, he was blindsided. I mean, they voted out Marba without him. And now it's basically him and Jacques on the bottom. Like, if one of them wins immunity, I really feel like the other one is going home.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I would agree with that. I think he was able to stave off, you know, elimination this time just because of what Steffi happened to do with Mubba's advantage, which we can get into a bit in a little bit, because I honestly do not know if Steffi purposely pumped up the advantage or whether she did it accidentally and just forgot what Mubba told her on the beach. But I think that, you know, Mike very much realized how behind the eight ball he was this episode. And I think he sort of realized that the players, the pieces that he had on the chessboard were, unfortunately, some pawns, maybe a couple of bishops compared to what Rob has, which is, you know, in the form of idols and allies, kings and queens across the board. And, you know, I think that the moves he made, or the move he attempted to do, was great from an entertainment perspective. I think people were sort of waiting for that to happen, or at least it to be attempted. I just think the execution from both the choice of players and the way he went about it wasn't great. I actually did admire how he approached Letitia. And like you said before, you know, you want to bring people in by making them feel like, you know, their self-interest is of worth. And so Mike just approaches Letitia, doesn't suggest the plan, but he says like, okay, who would you want to get rid of next? She says Marba for some reason. He says, okay, great. And then just sort of leaves it at that. I guess off camera, you know, Letitia talked about how she saw him go right back to Rob and tell him if that's the case, maybe that makes that move a bit worse. It makes me hopeful that maybe he still has a bit of like social acumen to him that people might just be like, I don't want to get rid of Mike just because he's a good guy. And I want to be able to work with a good guy with all these bad people like Jacques around me. But yeah, he got caught with his hand in the cookie jar on top of losing his closest ally here, though. I feel like he was almost kind of saved by Mabba not playing his idol, her idol, ironically enough, because yeah. I think the built up, you know, common reasoning from the community is if Mabba plays her idol, which we'll get into, if she plays her idol, you think that Rob pulls like a Jeremy Collins, stands up, plays his idol, all votes are canceled out. And then I'm pretty sure they would go for Mike in that case.
Definitely.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. What I keep going back to, though, is like I like this move from Mike, but it is so hard as a viewer because we know the full story. Like if you're Mike, right. You don't know about all of these relationships. You have to give credit to people like Nicole who have been able to. I mean, like Mike just is telling everything in front of Nicole. Like Nicole is always there. It seems like in every conversation that Mike is trying to have with someone to make a flip happen. So clearly like Nicole has done some great work for Mike to feel so comfortable with her. And so, you know, Mike is just operating on bad information because he's not reading the situation correctly. But I think what is even more interesting to me is the fact that it seems like Mike calls off this plan simply because of Rob's bluff with the advantage, not necessarily because he doesn't feel like he has Darrow, for example, right? Like, it's not like it's like, oh my gosh, Darrow betrayed me, blah, blah, blah. Or at least that's the way that I read the situation. It was just simply because of Rob's move with the whole bluff. So it seems like Mike then still thinks that he would be in good with the group and that he could still make the flip happen because he doesn't realize that Darrow's loyalties are so closely aligned with Rob.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I still have to criticize Mike because for me, I've always said it. I think basically just under a social game, read is the most important thing that you can have in the game. And Mike's read was just so off. And to me, that's really not like a simple distinction. That is the entire game. I mean, he's been waiting so long and he's rested his entire game on reading Letitia wrong, on reading Darrow wrong, on reading Nicole wrong. Like, so he didn't make any of the correct moves in the game because he had the completely wrong move read on what it seems like pretty much, you know, everyone in the tribe, probably even Rob, because he's I think he thinks he's probably closer to Rob than Rob. He has been in Rob's plan. So for me, you know, the fact that he didn't make these moves, if he'd had the correct move, the correct read, he would have made the moves earlier. Clearly, he should have been working, you know, with all the people who've been voted out, the Jeffs, the Dantes, the Kubases, dare I say the Roccos, I will go back to it. He should have, damn it, been working with Rocco. But I really do think it was too late for him. It just slipped away from him based on the wrong read. That's a really, really bad game mistake for me. And
yeah, man, sorry, I just wanted to differentiate between like the move itself and then the reads. Like, I completely agree with you, Shannon. Like, the reads were absolutely horrible. But like, if the reads were right,
but that's the whole game. Like, the reads were so wrong. Like, there's no if the reads are right. Like, then that's the whole game being different. Like, then it's perfect. Then everyone wants to work with him. But like, what actually happened was no one wanted to work with him. Like, that's awful.
And we can't let him off the hook for what he did at the end of this episode, which,
oh my God,
which we have to get into this. Jacques pulls out an idol, says, "You can't vote for me." Nico says, "Okay, we're playing this idol now. There is no air of mystery here. This is a real idol. If you vote for Jacques, it will be voided. Mike and Mabba, vote for Jacques." What the? Okay. Hell!
Can I defend it slightly? Can I be that person? Because it was dumb. I do think it was dumb. And to play devil's advocate, but I also kind of believe this. From their perspective, like, piling votes on Letitia of what will then be, like, basically a unanimous vote is probably as useless to them as voting for someone who's immune. Like, it literally is irrelevant because Letitia in their mind, again, based on the bad read, but Letitia in their mind is going home anyway, but the read was terrible. So when Mike actually votes in his voting confessional, he's like, "I feel so dumb for voting for someone I know is immune, but I basically am just trying to maintain trust." I mean, we saw how Steffi looked for changing her vote. He's basically trying to show he can be a good boy. He can stick to the plan. He basically doesn't want to move a muscle because he knows he's trying to make a big move, right? So he's just trying to like go with the plan. Mabba, from her perspective, does say, "Hopefully third time's a charm." And that I have an issue with Mabba because the guy's not going home. He actually is immune. So that one's worse for me. But from Mike's perspective, I do kind of get it, even though, I mean, it's crazy. He voted for someone who is immune. I mean, that's insane.
No, I mean, so I get that. And that's why, like, I still think that Mike felt in his position that, okay, it didn't work this week because Rob is going to play his advantage. But next week, I'm going to be able to make this move. So I'm just going to stay loyal. Don't try to ruffle any feathers. I'm just going to do exactly what I was told to do, even though it means voting for somebody who is immune. At the same time, they were immune. There's something fundamental in me that just says, why on earth would you vote for someone who you know already has an idol played on them? That's like going up and saying, I'm gonna vote for Nicole it's just something so fundamentally off about it that just crazy.
I mean, Shane Powers must be happy because finally someone was able to make their vote disappear. They were able to take advantage of it, and I see where you're coming from, but I feel like there is much more negative circumstances than there are positive here, because especially this jury, which was pretty pro Mike at this point, they're looking at that like, why would somebody do that? That's incredibly stupid. And I mean, he got lucky. It looks like from what the jury was saying, they're blaming the votes on Steffi and Doral.
They're like, that's definitely something Steffi would do.
instead of Mike and Mava. So maybe he got off a bit scot-free, but I could imagine in another circumstance, people are like, it comes across as both a cop out and a really dumb move. Objectively, I cannot believe it. I cannot fathom, and I do wonder how it's going to be received next time as well, because I don't know, maybe the others thought that they would be voting for Letitia. Letitia certainly seemed to think so. Maybe this will be taken as a sign of like, you said stick with this plan, but there actually was another plan and you weren't sticking with that one, so now we're gonna have to target you. I don't know, he's between a rock and a hard place anyway next week. It's unbelievable to me, and a truly unbelievable episode of Survivor.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the moment, yeah, sure, you're going to ascribe the vote to Steffi and to Doral, but once the jury goes back to Ponderosa and they start counting, they will, Maba's not going to vote for herself, right? So, like, they're going to figure it out. Although, I guess, like, Jock's vote wasn't shown, right?
No, the Rob vote did come up.
Oh, it did come up. Oh, okay, yeah.
But Jacques publicly said that was his vote. I mean, look, by the time they get to the final tribal council, the jury would know something like this. I mean, it's going to happen. There's a while until then, but really, I feel like the jury is the least of Mike's problems right now. He's like barely above Jacques in the tribe, which is like a horrible place to be.
Yeah, that's very true.
And
it goes the dirt on the ground, Jacques, and then Mike in terms of social standing.
Jacques is definitely below the dirt. I mean, Steffi's not yelling at the dirt as far as I'm aware. But look, Mike, there was a lot here that was bad. I mean, I hate to say it about Mike because he's such a sweet guy. But like Jacques, a lot of what he was saying was true, which was basically at tribal council, he's like, if you're on the split vote plan that is me, I'm immune. So you don't know who the other plan is. You know, like, you don't know. They've put you on that plan, so you have actually no control of who that person is. And again, saying it from our couches, but you would think alarm bells would be ringing for Mike before they were saying they were going to split by gender, and then somehow they work it out so that both Mava and Mike are on the Jacques plan. I mean, what do they have up their sleeves? And I would also be thinking, again, from my couch, why would they be getting rid of Letitia over Mava? Like, Letitia is a decoy, but why? I mean, Mava wasn't in the plan. Letitia is a threat, I mean, in the original alliance. Letitia is a threat to no one. This sounds like something they would say because it's convenient rather than something any reasonable person would do to just take out Letitia here for literally no reason. Basically, in a secret scene, he and Rob were talking and they were just like, her time has come. But do people really vote people out because, you know, their time has come? I think logically it would make sense that Mava and he are clearly on the outs, but the majority just have them blinded. It's amazing.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I think if the split vote plan is, I mean, you would want to think like, oh, okay, I will be voting for Letitia, which means that like at least one vote is going to Letitia. So then you could feel confident that that's what's going to happen. But it was so funny. Like even Nico was really trying to help, like talking to the, like, so I'm talking to the others.
One of you is going home.
It segues nicely into Nico's probably the most like blatant moment he's had as a host, which is, does anyone have an idol that they want to play? Jacques has an idol, but there are other ones out there. I feel like we belabored the point enough. We have to get into what Mava did here. I'm going to posit that I believe the final eight of Survivor South Africa is officially cursed. We now had two people who knew they were on the bottom find idols in an episode where they were vulnerable and for some reason not play them and go home with them in their pocket. That is too much of a trend.
I'm all for curses. I'm here for it.
I feel a little cursed having watched this episode, so we're definitely cursed.
It's like, come on, come on, please, please, please. I mean, I know ultimately probably, like you said, would have resulted in Mike going home just because Rob knows where the votes are going to go. So he knows that, you know, he's not going to risk it. He's going to play his idol that Doral for some reason gave back to him. And so then ultimately the votes will end up going on Mike. But just, I don't know, maybe it's this whole self-preservationist thing. Like, wouldn't you want, I don't know. It's just so hard for me to get into Mubba's head about what she was thinking. I mean, they just made her feel comfortable, I guess.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't want to chastise her too badly. I mean, she gets it. I mean, it cut to her crying in her final words. She got it. You know, the second the votes were being read, she got it. And definitely play the idol. Again, makes no sense that they would vote for Letitia. As Jacques was saying, you're voting for Jacques. You know that he's immune. You have no control, literally not even your own vote, which is useless. You have no control about who's going home. And you're not even, you know, we did give her Chizzy points last week for integrating into the alliance. And I think that that's valid, but you basically are, you know, last in, first out. So you have to think, I mean, that there's a strong possibility that you would be going home. And also, if you play the idol now and are safe, then they're definitely taking out Jacques next week. So you bring, you buy yourself a lot of time. So that's just, it seems objectively true. I don't know what it's like to be Mabo, who's been basically on the bottom, at least for the entire merge, finally get a tiny bit of power into your hands and have to give it up 30 seconds later. I'm sure that's difficult. I'm sure you're just hoping, if I can make it through, I can have this idol. I could actually have some power in the game. But I do think that she needed to be playing a more defensive game than she was, having been on the outs. And again, credit to the majority for making her feel as good as they made her feel. And we need to talk about her advantage, because she actually, we play name that lie to come up with an Island of Secrets lie. It's like her lie was too believable. It was really believable, but it was also too threatening. And I know, Mike, you want to talk about what Steffi made it, but I do think that what you want to do with these Island of Secret reveals or lies is basically you want to make them like as non-threatening, discreet, believable, and short-term as possible. And she was like, I can get an advantage, you know, at any reward or immunity until the final five of my choosing. And this is a tribe that just voted out Dante because they were scared he was going to take their rewards and immunity. So that's very, very threatening to them, even if she maybe saw it as not so threatening because, you know, she's thinking maybe if I have an advantage, I'm still not going to win the challenge. She's not exactly a challenge beast, but it was obviously very threatening to them the way Steffi said it. And I do think probably too threatening, even if they had told it accurately.
Right. I just want to clarify. So Mabba said, I will get an advantage in the competition, like in the challenge. Right. So like an advantage to help her win, whereas Steffi said she could steal a reward or an immunity.
So this is sort of what we've been talking about on Twitter. And I think Donald W. pointed out something interesting where, like, I think Steffi, to Shannon's point, sort of equated one with the other. Because, I mean, I guess the recent history of advantages was like we saw Doral have an advantage in the challenge and he basically walked away with it. Right. So maybe I don't know whether it was lost in translation or whether Steffi felt that, OK, Mabba says she has an advantage in the challenge. That essentially means she's going to win the challenge. Let me go back and tell Rob, which again, another fun, I'm sure, eye roll moment from you, Shannon, was her being like, hey, you know, we have to make sure we can't lie to each other. Everything's out in the open. Hey, Mabba, you should keep this a secret so nobody finds out in confessional. I can't wait to tell Rob about this. It's just like, it's one of those steppy things of like, if you do it, shame on you, but I'm fine doing it myself in terms of being duplicitous.
I do feel like Steffi is like barely paying attention to the strategy of the game in terms of how many things are like either misquoted or like mismanaged. I'm like, Steffi is kind of like only has a cursory interest in the strategy of what is going on right now.
It's so interesting because I know that people have been grouping Steffi and Nicole together, but I think the fundamental difference between them is I think Nicole is deluded while Steffi is hypocritical. Like, I think Steffi just has
both of them.
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, Nicole is not necessarily, you know, not doing what she's imparting onto others. I think Steffi is the one who's doing that. I think Nicole is the one who's saying everything must be good and fair. We want to play the game with integrity. And I think that's just a completely diluted perspective. So I think it's like two sides of the same bad coin, especially from a jury management perspective. But I do think there are some differences there.
Yeah, I mean, they're ice and fire, just like Jean said, right? But it's like and at least in this episode, I thought they were pretty on brand for what they've been, you know, Steffi being her most aggressive / sanctimonious self and Nicole, I guess, being her most sanctimonious self. And they were pretty on brand. It was like not a great size of those coins in this episode.
Who would have thought those two would be like the final tribal council goats? And Doral and Letitia are like the potential winners in this situation. I just want to go back real quick to Maba in this moment on the Island of Secrets. If you're her, so I, you know, what is the correct play? Because you can't just tell Steffi nothing. I mean, she's going to berate you until you say, look, this is what I got. So I think, Shannon, what you were saying is essentially, yes, make up a lie, but make it less threatening.
Liana, right? Are you asking to name that lie? Because I have some examples for you, because I was prepared to play it. So let's have some fun with, I only have a couple, but one thing that Maba did do was that in her voting confessional, she like held up another parchment and was like, this is just to confuse people. And I'm like, that's a pretty good one. Just say you have an extra vote at the next tribal council, because it's like, it's burned after this episode. I think anything you can keep to just this episode is a great one, you know? And I think that the numbers were broad enough that Nico isn't necessarily going to be, you know, it's not like a 4-5 or, you know, 3-5 with the 8 people. So it's, well, yeah, with her vote, 4-5. So it's not, it seems broad enough that Nico wouldn't necessarily be reading every vote. This is a hard thing to work out on the spot, as she has to come back and like immediately tell Steffi. But I think like a useless extra vote, you have to think like, what are the tribe really not going to be threatened by and also believe? And I also think if you want to say it's a challenge advantage, fine. But just to say that you can choose until final five, like I would just be like, I can practice for the next immunity challenge and I'm going now, and then just leave for 30 minutes and then come back and be like, I feel ready for that immunity challenge. Like, I think just something way more episodic than what she did would have been better.
I think immunity was a bad choice to include in there. I think reward advantage was probably, because I know that, like you said, there's been a huge weight on reward advantage, maybe less so now that Steffi actually has had an opportunity to feast and then promptly puke her guts out on the biostrat that she guzzled down. But I think that, you know, immunity is tougher, because then what Steffi's going to infer is basically, okay, Mob is going to be immune at some point in the near future up until the final five. She basically has that necklace guaranteed. And I totally agree with you. I think short term is best, which is another reason why she should have played the idol. You know how much of the stigma there is against idols. I think if she had held on to it and somehow survived, they would have made her flush that idol next time around. She would have gotten jocked hardcore by saying, like, okay, you have this idol? Great, you better play it next time, because otherwise you're the devil, and we're going to have to exercise the idol from this game.
Yeah, ironically, she had told them that she had the idol, then they definitely wouldn't have voted for her, because I think they would have been too scared. They probably just would have voted for Mike, and then she probably could have just held on to it. But, like, again, this is us just looking at it really theoretically. I just think the reward thing, these people are, like, obsessed with their rewards. I mean, they're really threatened by Jacques being able to steal a reward. I just think if you say, I'm going to go practice now for 30 minutes for the next immunity challenge, get to the immunity challenge, either win and you can't go home that round and then the advantage is gone, in quotation marks, or you lose and it's like, well, you wasted your advantage. So, yeah, I think just say you're practicing for the next challenge, or say, you know, you have a vote for the next immunity, anything that could be gone by tomorrow, because otherwise, you know, anything that could be gone by the vote, because if they're scared that it's going to last another round, they might just take you out at that vote before you can get to using it.
If Mubbo was going to do a sort of like a fake idol bluff like Jacques did, though, she definitely needs a button-up shirt, because I love that dramatic just like slowly closing, and the choice of Jacques to button from the top down also amazing, because that way you continue to see the idol. I don't know, I normally button shirts from the bottom up, so like, I was here for that. Also, can we talk about, I know this was last week's episode, but the fact that Rob gets the car for a month, and I know you're hammered on this, but I just still can't get over that. Maybe that's what Maba's like advantage should have been. It's like, okay, I get this, but I only get it at home for a month.
So I love it. Maba's trying to think about the most useless, irrelevant advantage she could have, and she's like, that is it. Like, there's nothing more useless than that. I'll just say that.
Or go with the old Nathan standard. I got to call my dad on a cell phone.
Who isn't calling home at this island?
Should have been a month's worth of biostrath. That's the
well, yeah, it's unfortunate they had just feasted and had biostrath, so she couldn't say that like that was her advantage. Call from home, a letter from home is always a good thing. I don't know. I just think anything.
Or maybe like there's a full canopy bed out in the jungle. I got to take like a 30-minute nap on it or something.
That sounds amazing, but it's just so unfortunate. Like, she definitely would not have gone home before Mike, who was running around and everyone was distrusting him. And because of the lie she made up, she became so threatening that they took her out first and then she didn't use her idol. Like, so many things happened in this one episode that were just so unfortunate for Maba. Like, I can't harp on. Yeah. Like, honestly, her final words, like, got me. The poor girl. Like, you know. Well, Survivor's hard, okay? It's really hard.
I know. I felt so bad for her in that moment. I mean, she immediately realized the mistake and, like, knew, and she was crying, and I was like, I felt so
on
bad.
On the bright side, she did, you know, she may not have used her quote-unquote challenge advantage, but she did win a challenge, which was awesome. I thought that was a nice little fun editing moment as well of, like, the David versus Goliath and Steffi's, you know, Maba slingshot is a game of Connect Four where Steffi just gets absolutely beasted. It was a lot of fun to see. Again, this isn't Steffi's huge downfall, but it's a little slip down the mountain for her where she gets promptly owned by Maba after volunteering to go to Island of Secrets to beat her.
Yes, especially because it was crazy that the majority set Maba in the first place. They have an extreme majority. They have full control. They know the exact pecking order. Like, why send the person who is seventh in the pecking order just because you're sure that you'll beat her? Why even take that risk? Like, send two of your own and then one of you will definitely control the power. So the fact that it came back to bite them in their arrogance was actually really satisfying for me, and I feel like I'm just clinging onto anything right now because I'm so frustrated.
I just like Connect Four is the challenge. I would appreciate another series of games. Like, okay, now we're gonna play checkers.
Monopoly. Survivor Fiji had the battleship immunity challenge. They could just do that again.
Yeah, I mean, Connect Four is dear to my heart. I mean, my brother has, you know, strategies that he has where he can only ever, you know, win or tie, which he's a very frustrating person to play games with. It's really not that fun. But I think if he was on that island, it would just go on forever in perpetuity. So that would have been fun to watch, just Steffi and Maba with their Biostrath on that island for the next 30 years, just endlessly playing Connect Four.
Wow, that feels like a Jean-Paul Sartre play in the making.
I like it, yeah. Definitely.
Let's laugh and pretend like I know that reference.
I also just pretend that, I don't point it out when I don't know. I just laugh at what Mike says.
This is the wonderful thing because, you know, Mike and I co-host the B&B together. Shannon and I can bond over the things that we do to placate Mike.
I'm texting Liana behind the scenes like, what is he talking about?
I don't know if I should feel offended or, like, elated that you go to those lanes to placate me. So I'm just going to split the difference.
I love and Liana being sister podcast wives for Mike. It's always just a great joy.
I love it. We definitely need to talk about the jury and the jury reaction.
Oh, yeah.
Because so fun. The jury looking fine. Jeff with his flower in the hair. Love that. So good. They are loud. I mean, we all talked about this last week, but my goodness, they are just the peanut gallery over there.
No, as I said on Twitter,
I can't remember. I guess if we're comparing last season to this season, at this point in time, who do you think is the more reactive jury?
I mean, I think this jury is super reactive. Maybe it's just because, like, Jeff literally was wearing a yellow flower. Like, it's like just like highlighted to us. Jeff even says at Ponderosa, he's like, I'm a really bitter juror. He's like, someone needs to rate me and I'm so bitter right now. Like, at least he can admit it. Like, as I said on Twitter last week, I was like, yeah, the jury might be a bit too vocal. Maybe we should rate it in. But I was so frustrated this week and I was rolling my eyes so much that I was like, yes, yes, yell at them. I can't yell at them. You yell at them. So it's a very bit of a different vibe this week. You know, and I love that they, like, I think that the tribe was expecting, you know, them to basically maybe vilify Jacques, like, oh my God, it was so terrible. Nico's like, would you have taken him out of the game in that moment? Like, they could have had a group vote, like, literally like a Vanna Zeke situation. Like, are you actually joking? I'm so frustrated, but it's fine. But then they're just, like, rolling their eyes, rightfully so, at this tribe who, like, lay down the law and just, like, put out this really wrong moral code. And honestly, I don't care if they're too loud. I needed that this episode. I needed that release, and I got it.
Yeah, it was very cathartic. I mean, when you have, there's just so much, like, stuff to chow down on. You know, when you have Nicole saying, well, we had to go after Jacques because we do not tolerate swearing on this tribe. Like, she's a school principal. I think that was a very prompted eye roll from Jeff, one of many over the course of this episode. I mean, even C-Pay, who I feel like is the most poker faced of the entire jury, when Jacques says that he is not allowed to talk strategy at camp, even C-Pay's like, wow, guys, which I feel like when you have C-Pay disapproving of the moves that you're making, that's not good, especially if you were in an alliance with C-Pay and she is even feeling that you're going too far.
Yeah, C-Pay would have made this all better.
They were just channeling all the frustration that I was feeling. I think the look on like Meryl's face, for example, when the Jacques votes came up was so good, because it's just like in complete disbelief that this is happening right now. Like, I mean, they just I would love to be a part of that jury. I just feel like it would be so fun to hear all of their crazy reactions to everything, like Jeff mocking when Nicole said that we don't tolerate that. And then like Kubis is just laughing. I mean, my goodness. But you have to, like, that's how I would feel, or that's how I felt watching this. So I can't imagine being a juror and feeling that times 10. I mean, that must be crazy.
My heart goes out to Kubis, who found out this episode firsthand from the person. Hey, the reason why you went home is because Steffi made a mistake. And then Steffi putting on that damn smile that you love so much, Shannon, in response to it. Kubis just puts his head in his hands with his delightful top button. Leona, I don't know how he buttoned his shirt, but I do like the look that he had going on as well.
He looked like a little schoolboy. And, you know, Jeff, his increasing indignation in increasingly vibrant outfits is something I enjoy watching. What will he wear next week? I don't know. Maybe some sort of funny hat. I would love to see him just, you know, roll his eyes at the jury in just increasingly bizarre outfits. I would be here for that.
Oh my gosh, that would be so fun. Like, watch his wardrobe just get more and more extravagant. Like, by the end, he's in like some sort of Mardi Gras. Yeah. Like,
no, he's wearing like a Chiquita Banana outfit with a fruit basket on his head, shaking his head at Nicole.
Yeah, and as he comes to Final Tribal Council to like rail them all in his speech, he's just in this like incredible fruit hat. I love that.
I would be very much here for that.
We had some talk on Twitter about this. You know, Jeff and Mike actually do have a bit of like a conversation back and forth through mouth words of, you know, Jeff mouthing to Mike what happened, and Mike says, I don't know. Is that sort of like blurring the lines? I'm assuming that's in the rules, I guess, of like how to communicate with the jury, right? Even though you're not technically supposed to.
Look, none of this stuff is okay, but as I said, I'm okay with all of it right now because I need them to yell on my behalf. Because I only can podcast about it two days later, and I've been yelling for this entire podcast, so I guess that's not enough for me.
Yeah, I guess it's hard. Like, where do you draw the line? You know, like, winking is okay, maybe, but mouthing words is not. Where does sign language?
Finger guns, where would that come? I don't know.
Morse code, you know, I don't know.
We had the thumbs up. It's so interesting, because I want to talk about the other side of things as well. I am just dumbfounded that, again, you have people saying these things at tribal council that are not received well on the jury. You're getting immediate feedback for the things you're saying. I'm just wondering why they're not incorporating it into their game. I know we talked about this last week, Shannon, with John, about how maybe someone like Steffi Nicole is just someone who doesn't necessarily think about the important role the jurors are playing in this moment. They're trying to concentrate on what's currently happening in the game. I don't know. I was talking to Aurora about this from Edge of Extinction, because I think there are some parallels. And, you know, she was attending tribal councils where the jury was very upfront about who they were rooting for and what moves they were approving and disapproving of. And, you know, she said, yeah, at least we were smart enough to vocalize. We knew they didn't like us. They don't like Rob and them, but at this point, they would give him the million over others. It is a little crazy to me how you would think people wouldn't necessarily change the way they're speaking about things when you say something, you look over in the corner and you see people just throwing their arms up in exasperation and in response to it.
What I would think is that, you know, Nicole is using language like this is fair and right. You know, this isn't people thinking, okay, you know, what's the scale of what we're doing? Is this okay? This is like objective, black and white, what we're doing is right. And if you feel like you're in the right that much, are you really listening after see how the jury feel about it? You know, you would think the jury will feel good about it. And if they don't feel good about it right now, they'll come to realize this is the objective right thing. You know, it's not a matter of subjectivity. I just think if there was any people, I was going to not be surprised that they weren't really hearing these incredibly loud jury reactions and just continuing on with what they're doing. It would be the people who, for me, who just believe they're so correct in everything that, like, of course they're going to keep going like with that. That's the correct thing, right?
I mean, I just can't imagine. They must be so distracting. The only thing I can think
of
is
flower,
if it's like
especially.
A It's so bright too. I don't know. I just can't imagine. Maybe it's like some sort of stage lighting type situation where like they can't see the audience, but the audience can see them type deal. And that's why they're just blinded. Because if I was saying something and I saw somebody who is sitting close to me eye rolling and throwing their hands up in the air and making exasperated sighs,
doing a little
dance, I'm gonna notice. So it just doesn't make sense, right? That the part of the feedback loop where the information comes back to the players in the game, that must be broken, because they're not the players like Nicole and Steffi are not changing their behavior based on what the jury is doing.
Well, we talked about this last week. I'm pretty sure now we can confirm that Nicole and Steffi do not read the comments section. I think that's pretty much no. verified at this point.
I don't know. As I said, Nicole retweets some of the negative things people say about her, like some of the funnier things I was saying about her that I don't think were really crossing a line. But this week people were mad and she was still retweeting. I don't know what kind of flex that is, but it's definitely a choice.
Like weird flex, but okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, just retweet that. I don't know. Like confront it head on, I suppose. Good for her, maybe.
Yeah. And now a quick break to hear from our sponsors. And we are back. All right. I feel like this group therapy session has been helpful. I feel like I vented a lot. Hopefully the listeners feel like they've gotten some of their frustration out hearing it kind of paraded back to them, because I know that the internet, I read the comment section and I know that the internet was angry like we were. So I hope that this has kind of scratched that itch. But let's get to something a little bit happier. Let's end this therapy session on something really happy. So, you know, later it will be bias wrath, but right now it's the chizzy. So take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and MC Color.
1, 2, 3.
All right, well, the chizzy, we're getting to the point where we need to start reducing the points, Mike. I'm telling you this on air. I haven't discussed it with you off air.
I think someone helpfully suggested this week that we should have switched chizzy and dupe of the week, where we give the ranking to the dupes and then just award one person a chizzy.
I love the sentiment, but also that would really screw with, you know, the very, very important spreadsheets. So I do love the sentiment. And look, in the chizzy, when we did it for Survivor New Zealand and Australian Survivor last year, we do reduce the points eventually, and I'm pretty sure it's going to be next week, because this week was tough. But the points that I have, I'm going to give my player of the week 2 points. Some people are mad at him, but like easily Rob. I mean, it's not close. He is an incredible player. He's probably strategically and definitely strategically the only winner that the season would deserve. I mean, I'm here to see some other funny things happen, like a Doral win, or I'm interested to see it go in maybe more entertaining ways for the TV product. But from a strategic perspective, you know, what he's been able to achieve is incredible. We've talked a lot about it, but I'm just sorry that I didn't understand how great the fake advantage lie was last week. Definitely giving him points for how brilliant that was. He has Doral on lock. He actually has the whole tribe on lock. And I do think, you know, people were mad about it. I think it's way more strategic for him than personal. It might be a little personal as well, but he seems to still be having fun with it. You know, he's laughing confessional. You actually might see that as kind of gross, depending on what, you know, because it comes with what we're seeing and what Jacques is going through. But I think he still feels like he's playing a game, and how much that, you know, offends people, because it, you know, he's playing some pretty dirty pieces right now, some pretty ugly pieces of ostracizing Jacques. I totally take that point, but I think a lot of it is strategic, and I think that he is an absolutely incredible player. So I'm giving him 2 points. I'm going to give a point to Jacques. I'm going to, you know, give this as my chizzy hug. I know he cares about the chizzy points. I really wanted to give Jacques a hug, and this is a chizzy hug. But I, you know, I admire the effort and the creative way he's tried to play his idol. I mean, he has made that idol last through a lot of different tribal councils. He tried to play creatively
Remember, this is what he found at Lao Mei during like the Misfits period. He's held on to this idol for like almost 10 episodes at this point.
Yeah, incredible. It's especially crazy when he's really been on the bottom and he's made it work. Even now he tried to use it creatively when no one was talking to him, and I admire the effort. I thought a lot of what he was saying in tribal council, aided by Nico, made so much sense. And in a different situation where Rob, who is so good, doesn't have the tribe on such complete lock, it may have worked out. So I'm giving him the point, A for effort, and also just like, love you, man. Like, it's okay. And then I want to give a point as well to Doral. Again, every week when I give Doral a point, I'm like, it was a hard week. But, you know, as I said, his plan gives him a 10% chance of winning the game, I think, around there. And that's insane. I don't think he realizes it. I don't know if he's trying to do that, but you know what? It may just work out. And you know, talking about the trust exercise and him giving back the idol to Rob, that may look really dumb in ways. It may be really dumb, much like much of what Doral does. I can't really analyze things from his perspective because he's Doral. But, you know, if we're saying that the plan is to just make Rob trust you, trust you, trust you until you get to Final Four beyond when idols can be played so you can take him out at a Final Four, then it works within that plan. That gives him a 10%-ish chance of winning the game. So I credit that. And those are my points this week. So, Mike, what are you doing this week?
Copy and paste. I had the exact same things, but I guess a few notes on that. So yeah, with the Doral stuff, yeah, I mean, it would have been awesome if he held on to the idol and voted Rob out with it, you know, Paul style, or even if he had taken the idol, said, great, switched it with his fake one, had a quote unquote change of heart, and then brought the fake idol back to Rob. I mean, that would be in the theming of international Survivor players beginning with the letter D, swapping out fake idols for real idols. Maybe that's just what I want to manifest personally. But I do think that while frustrating, it was an exercise in trust. And I do wonder, actually, if Rob was kind of anticipating him to give back the idol. You know, I think if Doral held onto that idol, it actually might not be a great look on him, considering just how if you put one toe over the line, it's an excuse for the amigos to vote you out. So yeah. I think Doral is remaining subservient right now. And while it's a really frustrating position to be in, it might be the best for his game. And totally co-sign what you said about Jacques and especially Rob. I mean, I have really came to just admire every single facet of his game. The amount of strategy he's able to wield through his social connections is absolutely remarkable to me. And then this you know, advantage lie is sort of the cherry on top of the sundae there, where he's able to utilize his relationship with Mike to wield a bit of power. And I'm becoming increasingly nervous about if he goes to the final tribal council, how his game will be received, especially if he doesn't end up going with both Nicole and Steffi. There was a lot of comparisons to Boston Rob and Redemption Island. You know, the big hearsay from Redemption Island is Rob could have only gone to the end with Natalie and Philip. Otherwise, he would have lost in any other configuration. I really hope people, if he does make it to the end, acknowledge just the supreme game that he's playing, because I totally agree. You know, to sort of clarify what I said before, I really love the fact that he was, you know, laughing it up about the advantage bluff that he was making. I love the fact that he's having fun with the game. And it's because of the fact that he's not also moralizing while laughing it up as well. It seems like he really does seem to acknowledge that what he's doing is part of the game and not part of some sort of, you know, what is right and what is wrong moral construct. And I really enjoy that. And just the calm ferocity he's approached the game has been second to none. So, you know, while I am eager to see an uprising against the amigos, I have to acknowledge the game that he's playing right now.
Well, go ahead and copy and paste again. To be honest, when I was trying to assign my points, I was working backwards. So that's why, like, I love the concept of flipping the doof of the week, like mm-hmm. with the chizzy points, just because I was like, okay, I can't give it to so-and-so. I can't give it to so-and-so. I mean, Rob, my God, I don't want to pile on more praise, but I can't help it. And I should also be rooting for his downfall. And yet at the same time, I also want to see him win. And it's just it's the blue eyes, the charisma. It just seems like he's having fun out there, whereas, you know, Nicole and Steffi, and we've talked about this, are coming from just such a sanctimonious place. Whereas Rob, like, Rob's face when Doral comes back to him saying that the Mike's plan isn't going to happen, that Mike has, you know, called an audible, we're not doing this, that was just so fun to watch. And the fact that Jacques can go to Tribal Council, say, hey, I'm playing this idol, I'm safe, I'm voting for Rob, loose change players, let's go, let's put all our coins on Rob and vote him out. And it's the womp womp reaction that we get from everybody else. It's just so amazing. It's just baffling to me. And Jacques, I mean, I think he did the best that he could. I mean, can you imagine just being completely socially ostracized from this group, not even able to talk strategy with the people who are trying to make a flip vote happen in Mike, right? I mean, I don't remember a conversation where Mike was like, hey, so Jacques, like, this is what we're trying to do. I mean, Jacques is just operating completely blind, trying to do his best, and I just my heart goes out to him. That's just so hard. And then little sweet baby Doral just out there. I completely agree with the concept of, like, oh, if he gave the idol back, that would act, or if he didn't give the idol back, that would actually somehow be worse.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Also because I don't trust Drow to ever play that idol correctly in any sense of the word. It's best if Rob just has it and feels super, super comfortable with Drow. So
yeah, it's sort of like giving like a like, oh, here, you bought this lollipop, son. Let me give it to you. You know what? Actually, let me hang on to it because you're going to like drop it in the sand and then start licking it. And I don't necessarily want that.
Yeah, I mean, Rob called it a trust exercise, but it was really much more like a trust test. And Darrell passed, and it's good to pass with Rob at the moment, especially when, like, look, that's probably his ticket to, as we've said, the final four and maybe, you know, a winning game. So that's what he's trying to achieve, and I think that this was the best one. I mean, I do feel like if he keeps Rob's idol, what are the odds that Rob blindsides him with that idol? That would make him really untrustworthy, right? And Darrell, as you said, is probably not going to play it correctly. That's like, you know, he shouldn't be operating heavy machinery like an actual real idol that's not a fake idol. I mean, considering he also lost the fake idol that he had. We still don't know what happened to his other fake idol. I loved at Ponderosa, Dante asked Marba if Rob's idol is real or a fake from Darrell. And I'm like, why wouldn't it be fake from Darrell? Like, no one can. Darrell just has a shop of fake idols. That's the only way you can get fake idols is if you go and visit Darrell.
Well, I love that, too, because I don't believe Darrell, at least from what we were shown on the show, told anyone that the idol was fake. But I'm pretty sure they just assumed. They're like, oh, no, that's got to be a fake. Why would Darrell actually have a real idol and, like, actually still have it in his pocket? I'm going to put out a bold prediction here for next week, and I really hope it's not the case. I feel like next week the Jacques stops here. The Buck's going to stop here. I feel like he's too much against the corner. I don't know, you know, again, his idol's all the way back from OG Lao Mei. I don't know if they're going to hide another one at the camp or
on
iOS.
I think they would hide one because two just got like flushed from the game, but it might be on iOS. And then how will we ever go to iOS?
Exactly. And then the other thing is he's Jeff Pimmon actually pointed out that he's been super close in challenges, so he could pull out an immunity there. If he doesn't, I unfortunately feel like our big underdog story is going to be cut short. It's actually reminiscent of like what happened to PK last season. But I will say, if Jacques goes on to the jury, I think he will be the biggest stumper for Rob possible because he has such a big respect for the game that, I mean, I think him, it's actually what he did for Rob was very reminiscent of Xi'an in All-Stars being like, the person I'm going to be voting for tonight is the one who everyone should watch out for because I think they're winning the game. And, you know, she ends up voting for Amber. I could very much see big fan of the game and huge respect of gameplay Jacques being someone who, if and when Rob gets to the final tribal council and people are ragging on him for things, Jacques could be the Spencer Bledsoe to Rob's Tony to be like, no, you don't realize what he's doing. We need to commend him for this.
I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Jacques is a fan of the game. I mean, I think he would be the one to say, like, look, we are picking somebody to represent our season. You know, like, are we going to pick Darrell? Can we in good faith pick this
person?
That'd
be so fun.
but I really hope you're wrong, Mike, even though I sadly might agree with you. I never thought I would be rooting for a Ben Driebergen-esque type run with Jacques here. But it's going to be sad when he gets voted out next week. Hopefully not, though.
If this was US Survivor, I've said it, Jacques would be the winner and it would not be close. Like, if all he had to do was find an idol for the next however many rounds, like, he 100% would win, but it seems really, really far away for Survivor South Africa. And you can't even really just, like, cheer him on in the immunity challenge. I mean, I will be, but then just, like, Mike's going to go. That's what it seems like. So, like, it's not even, like, that'll change really anything. It'll just flip them around. It's just such a dire situation. But can we please cheer ourselves up with the Biostrat Variety Hour? By the way, also doof of the week. I mean, I have here that everyone's a doof, but Steffi is leader of the doofs.
Yeah, considering that she's someone who, granted, she's still in the majority. And, you know, there are certain other candidates, like people who didn't play their idols or try to organize plans using main allies of that person they were trying to, you know, strike against. But I mean, going from admitting that she accidentally voted out the wrong person due to switching her vote to purposely sending herself to iOS and getting beaten by that person to get an advantage to maybe mistranslating the advantage. We're not entirely sure. To getting laughed at tribal council when Jacques outed her for voting indirectly. It just, the doofs just get doofier here. And I feel like, I know we didn't do one last week, but I'm going to co-opt, you know, what I would have given to Steffi for being a doof this week as well.
Although technically her target did go home. Like, she was targeting Mabo and Mabo went home. I don't know if you get any points for that, considering how terrible she was the rest of the episode.
Such an easy target, though, poor Mabo. But this is just sad again. So I'm going to stop rolling my eyes.
Sorry.
And Biostrat Variety Hour. So take it away, Jacob Sager Weinstein and the U.S. Army Blues.
And now it's the BioStrat Variety Hour with your host, Shannon Gates. And also Mike Bloom.
All right. So the first question that I have for the BioStrat Variety Hour is, do you feel like Mama being blindsided 24 hours after downing BioStrat is like a bad endorsement for the product? Or do you feel like, as was pointed out to us on Twitter, she felt super immune, so she felt like she didn't need immunity? And is that worse?
Wow. BioStrat actually screwed over Mama.
Yes,
I'm here for it.
Exactly.
She's like, I thought I was immune. I thought I would be okay. So before we get into anything more, so I don't want to like co-opt the BioStrat Variety Hour, but this is by far my favorite segment on pretty much any podcast of any time.
Thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. So I know Tevin didn't comment on this, him being the actual real medical professional, but I feel like I am at least somewhat qualified to talk about the effects of BioStrat. So to give a little bit of my credentials, I am a scientist. I have a PhD in biomedical engineering. I currently work at Yale University at the Cardiovascular Research Center. I co-host a podcast where we play Mad Libs and read fan fiction. So I think I'm like really qualified to talk about this. I did a little bit of research on like actually the effects of BioStrat that has been studied in like clinical settings.
Oh God, what have we done to ourselves?
I promise this will be brief.
Could you not have told us this 2 weeks ago, by the way? Like, thank you for this now.
Okay, yeah. Well, I mean, this is not going to change your opinions, I think, of actually drinking BioStrat. But it was shown in mice in the 70s. That it increases their immune system.
Ooh.
So there was a study that was done in 1990, so about 30 years ago, on the effects of BioStrat, which, by the way, BioStrat has been around for like 65 years.
What? I did not realize that this was around for so long. I just assumed that somebody went into a swamp and bottled the water like 5 years ago and put it out as a product.
I just want to say that, like, as I've said, I've been frustrated by this episode, and I thought Liana coming in, you know, would cheer me up, and then she came in with the history of BioStrat, and she really did cheer me up so much. Thank you so much, Liana. Thank you.
Oh, I'm so happy I could be here. But yeah, literally, so there's like, for scientists, they have this like compilation essentially of every like paper, and you can like search like, oh, okay, I want to know about like this disease or whatever. I'm like searching BioStrat at work. So that's like now in my science search history, which I'm actually pretty proud of. Mm-hmm. So I found the one paper that studied BioStrat in humans, at least that I could find. And essentially what they did is they gave people BioStrat for 30 days. Happened to be, I know, they had to drink it 3 times a day, y'all. 3 times a day for 30 days. I feel terrible for the participants of this study.
No, we love BioStrat.
I mean, I feel so proud for the participants in this study.
Where do I sign up?
I'm so jealous. Oh my goodness.
I know, aren't you? So they drank BioStrat for 30 days and then essentially tested the effect on the immune system of these people. They happen to be long distance runners, so I don't know if there's something specific about long distance runners. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But I have to report that there was negligible difference between the control group and the BioStrat group, meaning that there seemed to be no difference in the immune system of the people that drank BioStrat compared to the people that I maybe drank swamp water. I can't remember what the control was, because that's probably what they had to do to get the taste to be equal.
Negligible sounds like something. I mean, it's not nothing, right? Negligible is just a little bit. Like, they were a little bit more immune.
1% is better than 0.
I have felt 1% more immune. I mean, I did have pneumonia in the last 2 weeks since having BioStrat. I don't think those two things are connected, but I mean, it's something that happens.
We might have our new study now. Liana, do you want to write up a paper about the effects of BioStrat in causing pneumonia?
No, Mike. We get sued for defamation. Media law is like the one thing I can do. We should not abort mission.
We'll do a case study.
Oh, no, you didn't sing your song, Shannon. I didn't know if I was supposed to abort this or not.
Yeah, we didn't get the Jingle Bells song, you guys. Come on.
Mike, please. Gonna sing Christmas jingles so we don't get sued by BioStrat.
Look, here's what I will say. I think that the evidence is inconclusive. You know, we only have one paper. It was a small group of people that they studied. It was a weird subset. You know, long distance runners, maybe they already have a really great immune system.
What are you trying to recruit us to? Because we're not doing it. We're out.
Guys, so reach out to me. Contact me on Twitter. I am looking for participants for a BioStrat study. BioStrat, not just Strat, because I did look them up. They are different.
Oh, we had the exact same reaction.
How are they different?
So they both contain the same yeast, but it's the other ingredients that were different. So Shannon, you actually got orange and honey. I don't know if you could get the notes.
I could mainly taste the yeast.
It's like the worst wine tasting ever.
Yes, with notes of yeast.
They're just bad notes.
Yeah, right. And then, Mike, yours was somehow worse. You didn't have any, like, good, potentially good flavors, but I can't remember.
Maybe we should mail each other all different products now that we know they're slightly different and do another tasting, because now we know.
Well, okay, yes. Cut to 3 weeks from now. Oh, no, mine got lost in the mail. I guess we'll never do it.
Oh, no. So, yes. So, anyway, so this was a study that was published in the British Journal of Sports Medicine like 30 years ago. So, I think we're looking to do a follow-up study. So, I just wanted to bring a little bit of information.
Amazing.
Do you think they should go the Coke route and do, like, new Biostrath and change up the formula?
This is Crystal Biostrath. like a Crystal Pepsi.
I mean, it is still going to be yeast-based, and I think that the yeast is the problem, but it's also what we've now discovered, which has been amazing information, but we've now discovered that Biostrath is pretty much just liquid yeast. So I think that, you know, that's the problem, and it's also the entirety of the product. So I don't want to get sued by Biostrath.
Based on what I've been reading, because the paper from 1974 is like literally the exact same formula. So Biostrat has not changed their formula in like 60 years, 65 years.
Stubborn brand. So
maybe they're different branding.
Don't fix what's broken. That's what I always say.
Well, this was amazing. I mean, it's more amazing than what I have from the sponsors, which was basically, how did the sponsors respond to a complex and emotionally traumatizing example of bullying? And they all did have their own takes on the situation. This was fun. Biostrath said, well, Jacques, what can we say? It's Survivor. If you lose your focus, you lose your game. Like, Biostrath, don't victim blame. Like, what is that? Don't take the side of the bullies. No.
Rude.
Yeah. Cape Union and Marches posted a gif of a sad cartoon dog. And Sears said, out of the alliance, but not out of the game. What fire move are you going to make next, Jacques? And, like, I just feel like connecting it to the brand's not great. Then to move on to Mahindra, they said, as tension waves heavily at Manu Malo, there is only one vehicle that would be able to handle it. The Borello is the toughest workhorse. Read the room, Mahindra.
Yeah, talk about like the worst segue ever.
So bad. They used it for product placement. It was so traumatizing.
I would no. Here's what I expect. It would be like Kleenex coming in and being like, so you've had a bad day. Soak up your tears.
Well, it's very comparable to the, I don't know if you guys remember back in the aforementioned Survivor All-Stars with the Sue Richard Hatch stuff. Tylenol did the push through the pain moment. Was Sue yelling at Jeff Probst.
That's awful. That's really bad.
Oh, man. I don't know which one is worse.
Yeah, I mean, terrible. Look, Cape Union Mart. No one finds Cape Union Mart as funny as I do, I think. But I just love that a guy, he's tweeting. He's not even using the collective we. He's just like, this is what I want to do. He's so frustrated by this week. And now Cape Union Mart is literally my favorite of the sponsors. Like, he was like, there were so many opportunities for people to have made sneaky moves, but they just kept following Rob, shrug emoji. And then, why is Letitia not making moves? If I were her, I would be mixing things up. It's just such casual commentary. He's so frustrated. Cape Union Mart is really, I think, speaking for the people now and not connecting their product to traumatizing moments, which is what I request.
Yeah, no, that's what I think I love about, especially the tweet that why is Letitia not making big moves? If I were her, I'd be mixing things up, like that one, because
you're a brand. If I Cape Union Mart were Letitia, I would be mixing things up. It's like, you are a product company, Cape Union Mart.
Oh, that's funny.
Also, so Sears have a new product, and it's called the Cheese Boy Burger. And it's, again, I really, like, Sears does not watch the show anymore, as we've said, but they said new Cheese Boy Burger Meals, the tribe we all want to join. Like, that is so loosely connected to Survivor, you know. And then they also said, no matter how much rice you eat, it'll never taste as good as a Cheese Boy Burger Meal. And Sears, I was frustrated a lot this week. I didn't need more from you. You know I hate it when you compare your products to island food, the lowest bar in the world. Please stop doing that, okay? I've had a week.
I'm kind of obsessed with the name Cheese Boy Burger Meal. Like, it sounds like a euphemism if you were going to, like, some sort of weird bordello in Eastern Europe and you wanted, like, some company be like, yes, I'll have the cheese boy burger meal. And they'd be like, great, your meat will be arriving shortly, sir.
Maybe I'm just like so focused on this episode, but I feel like it's like what Steffi would yell at Jacques, what he is. You're a cheese boy burger. How dare you call us that?
Yeah, I think I said more Shannon on this one. I like it as an insult.
Oh, come on. You cheese don't boy. Side with cheese boy burger referring to a young male prostitute?
Well, you know, now that you say it so explicitly, Mike, yes, I'm definitely going to have to go with you.
I'm just texting Liana to ask young what you're talking about. I don't know what's going on.
No. Let me drive in my 1 month rental of the Mahindra car to pick up my cheese boy burger prostitute. Okay, thanks, Mike.
Maybe Steers is a front for something, just saying.
Can we not be sued by a brand in this podcast? Like, all I request of you is that we don't get sued by one of the sponsors.
Oh my gosh, I don't know. You guys have a lot of competition for who's going to go after you. I think Cape Union Mart was like, would be your best friend, but everybody else, you know, I think you might be in danger.
If Biostrath is
all I said was Biostrath is swamp water and Steers is running an undercover youth prostitution ring. There's nothing wrong with either one of those statements.
I think next week you guys should bring on a lawyer to talk about the details of brand defamation.
Yeah, I think just invented Pizzagate for Survivor South Africa. I don't know how I feel about it.
Well, yeah. The last thing I have here is that Survivor South Africa itself tweeted, after Manu Malu effectively shut Jacques out, has your opinion of any Survivor SA castaway changed? If so, make a mark for your fan fave and get an entry to win a bold and dynamic Mahindra XUV300. Get 10 more entries when you test drive any vehicle at a Mahindra dealership. And I'm just imagining all the people who are so angry about this episode. Like, there's so much anger out there just madly driving Mahindra so they can get more votes, so they can vote Jacques up and vote the others down, because I feel like that's definitely something they're doing.
Could you imagine getting to the dealership of like, okay, sir, would you like to check out our new car? No, I'm just driving because Steffi sucks. Give me the keys.
Exactly. Cheese boy.
If you test drive 10 different cars, is that how you get your additional entries?
I don't know. How
exactly does that work?
I think you get 10 more entries with each vehicle you test drive. So I guess you could go around just test driving different ones, get like 100 entries a day, and just show these people your anger in driving.
This feels like the least green way of voting I've ever heard in my life.
It'll be go test drive a bunch of cars, drive
Survivor South Africa is going to add instrumentally the level of fluorocarbons in our atmosphere just because everyone wants to vote Jock.
I'm excited for my next study after I finish the Biostrath follow-up, which is the effects on the environment of Survivor. So I'm going to include the deforestation of Fiji, of course, the driving of the cars, you know, all the stuff.
Fake idols at the bottom of the ocean.
Durrell's fake idol, polluting the ocean definitely gets added for sure.
Yes, well, so I think the very broad landscape that we've covered in this podcast kind of was a perfect encapsulation of what the question threads were for me this week, because they were like, I woke up after posting the question threads and there was a lot of like, rank the bullying in Survivor history. I was like, ah. Then there was a lot of, because Liana is Liana, it was like, who is the biggest Na'ak? You know, like, there was like the silliest questions ever. And then also it was like, so serious. So to get to a couple of questions that we haven't actually got to, Connor on Twitter asks, is Rob on Kim levels right now? Anytime anyone tries to even mention his name, chaos ensues and that person becomes public enemy number one. So yeah, I guess if Rob can really take this, and even if he can't, like, where is he ranking in terms of like all-time great players?
I mean, he just has such a stranglehold on the game. I mean, you know, I don't want to be, I don't know. I think you have to be results oriented. Like, we're going to have to see how this plays out, you know, because if he is able to make it to the end of the game with such crazy levels of control, I mean, we are talking like Boston Rob, Kim levels of gameplay, just because of the stranglehold he's had on this game the entire time.
Yeah. And we also, let's remember that even at this point, Werner had not made what was, in my opinion, like the best move he's made in his game, which was the idle play on Jean to get rid of Katinka. So there's still a little bit of game to be played. I think the Kim comparison is interesting as well, because I think from a social perspective, he definitely has those Kim vibes and everyone just trusting him and feeling like, yeah, you know, people might say they're in with Rob, but I'm really in with Rob, which harkens back to that BB19 comparison you made, Liana. Again, I would say, The thing that's not so Kim is that I feel like Kim really could have gone to the end with like anybody out of the final seven, maybe six. And I unfortunately still think that Rob can only really go to the end with Nicole and Steffi at this point to guarantee a win for himself.
Yeah, you know, it's not so, Kim. Worlds apart. Sorry, that's all I can
and technically, and technically San Juan del Sur, too, considering all the preseason stuff.
Yeah, I think that's why Boston Rob is the comparison. You know, jury, it's a bit iffy. Mm. Control is extreme. Are the methods pretty? Sometimes no. But you can't, you know, argue with the results and the strategic acumen. And, you know, he's not doing it as a returner like Rob was. So he's just brilliant. Like, honestly, what a game. Lauren Brooke asks, could Jacques...
Wait, sorry, hold on. I need to go back just to contest what Mike said about Werner's best move. Because I think eating the idol clue definitely counts for me as his best move. I'm just kidding, but I had to say that because it's such a good moment. Okay, all right.
I'm someone who tried Biostrat 2 weeks ago, so I'm not going to, like, you know, throw stones in glass houses.
Liana, just for a brief second, I love when you do your impression of Werner. Can you do it for me?
I ate the clue.
Yeah.
It's so embarrassing. It's so bad. I was like, man, I need to like actually work on my real impressions because it would be so much better and way less offensive, but that's okay.
Yeah, that was not a great impression. So
oh yeah, no, it's terrible.
You might be getting sued by Werner. We'll let you get you in touch with the lawyers we also need.
Warranted, it makes sense.
All right, Lauren Brooke asks, could Jacques have said he was going to play his idol and then say he was just Jacquing since Nico hadn't yet called for idols, thus closing the no take backsies window? And I just wanted to kind of address this because we had a lot of like, could he have done this? I think definitely not, because Nico said you can't take it back and you really can't be using production to lie to you. We also got a lot of questions of like, could Maba have left the, you know, the idol for Jacques or for Mike? No, that's not how idols work. They become dead idols as soon as you're getting voted out. So we saw her put it in her bag, but I think that was just because she didn't want to, like, you know, carry it in her top down the path. So there was no option there.
Yeah, the only contesting element was last season when we thought for a while, okay, Tony got voted out with that extra vote from, you know, the Exile Island. I guess it's dead now, but she was able to give it to Annalise before she left the game. I guess that doesn't, like you said, maybe that works some with just general advantages and less so with idols specifically because they're such a fundamental part of the game. I'm not entirely sure, but I would assume the same thing.
Yeah. Jimmy G asks, Rob and crew look terrible in this episode and the jury can't stand them. Could that in a roundabout way mean one of them doesn't win? Survivor doesn't give us an episode like that to have one of them be the winner of the season. And to that I say Tom. Tom Schwartz. Schwartz and all edit. That's what we get here on Survivor SA. Yeah. And I don't think Rob will get as bad. I mean, maybe it's because I'm a fan. We've agreed. Mm-hmm. Rob's a little different to me. I don't think that Steffi and Nicole can win. Certainly not if there's going to be a final three. But Survivor SA, it's a very different beast.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're thinking about, okay, the way that the boots each episode have been edited to be relatively straightforward, if you sort of take that logic and then apply it to the overall winner's edit of, okay, this season, they're just going for things that are straightforward. Like, I guess then maybe you could think that that's the case. But yeah, I mean, Tom. So we'll just leave it at that.
Jimmy, I love you. And I totally agree that I think even from like from a U.S. perspective, definitely maybe even Australia, the people who are just getting over the top negative edits would not necessarily take it away. But considering that our winner last season had an episode where he threatened to physically beat up another contestant
who voted for him to win, who
wasn't walking away with the million rand, the exciting yet frightening thing about Survivor SA is anything is possible. And I still firmly believe that. Maybe it's overly optimistic and this season has been a bit more straightforward compared to last season, but I'm still hopeful there are a few tricks up Survivor SA sleeves when it comes to the rest of this season.
Another thing with the editing is this did happen. Like, this is something that happened. They're going to show it, especially, like, being more transparent with Survivor South Africa with the edit. But, like, even if it was US Survivor, I mean, I don't think Rob came off as bad as the others, as I've said. But, like, what could US Survivor do? This is something that they did. It was really narratively important. Jacques's not allowed to talk to anyone on the island. Like, it's definitely something that you're going to see on the show. So one of those people might end up winning, you know, they obviously might all sit next to each other. So it's something that's just very, very possible, even with what we saw. And the final question takes into a bit of a different place, but Edmo wants to ask you, Liana, if you would try Biostrath and not just do a study on it. Are you going to get some strath and actually join us in trying the product?
Yeah, no.
Where's your commitment?
I have to say, until my study is complete, I have to stay impartial. And I plan on studying the long-term effects. And by long-term effects, I mean my entire lifetime's worth of effect on Biostrath. You know what, Mike? We're going to a live show together September. Go ahead, bring some Strath, and I will do a taste test.
Oh my god! Ooh, okay, film it.
I'll do it.
Famous last words. Okay, I will bring some Strath for a taste test. Liana, good luck. I'm excited to not only see you in person, but even more so now to see you trying Strath.
I may completely regret this decision, but you know what? I'm game for anything. Let's do it.
And you're only saying that because you know that by September, Biostrath will be suing us and we won't be able to do this and we'll basically not be able to talk about the product. So very, very smart decision from you, Liana. But that is all the stuff that we have. I have unilaterally decided that the hashtag is Mother Jaca because we have, you know, been leading the entire podcast season with Jacques puns. To get to this point, it's actually kind of perfect. It's a shame that it happened in this situation. But I also want to say, you know, Mike, it's your birthday tomorrow, and you said that this was going to be your last podcast in your 20s. Well, joke's on you, because it's actually 1 a.m. in Australia. So it actually is your birthday. So happy Mother Jacques birthday.
Wow. Thank you so much. And I think you're the first person to officially wish me a happy dirty 30. And yeah, I mean, listen, I even though this episode was so emotional in so many ways, I cannot think of a better way to ring it in than to talk about Survivor and go into some wackadoo conspiracy theories with, quite honestly, two of my favorite people to talk with in the world. Aww. So thank you.
You know, cheese boy.
Oh, boy. Well, we're going to have to talk later about prices if you're going to go in that
That's
direction.
That's not how I meant it. Stop taking it to that place.
No, I love it. Yeah, it's the last podcast of your 20s, first podcast of your 30s. We're talking about cheese boy prostitutes. What could be better?
I mean, it's the most on-brand thing for me personally, and I'm excited to bring that mentality into a new decade of Mike Bloom and the various podcasts that they let me do here.
Yeah, you'd be well kicked out of the tribe, like at this point, 100%. Sorry to say that you're on your birthday, but it's not your birthday where you are, right?
So. No, exactly. Yeah, thank you for broaching me with some truth the day before I begin broaching a new part of my life. But yeah, excited to see, you know, Shannon, I believe it's just you and I next week. So, you know, we'll do a bit of a more down low birthday celebration. But I'm very intrigued to see where the season goes from here. If this was going to be a one-off trend of an episode in terms of emotional reactions, or if this is going to be what the rest of the season is, I really hope it's the former, personally.
We're going to have to make up a lot of really weird conspiracy theories to bring some levity to the situation. But Liana, you really did come in and cheer me up with the thing you knew would cheer me up more than anything, which is the history of Biostrath and also just being, you know, your delightful self. So where can everyone find what you are doing in the podcast world? Because I know that, quite like Mike, it's always a lot.
Well, first, thank you both so much for having me. This was so much fun. Maybe not the episode I would have chosen if I could have picked. But you know what? We have to tackle these things head on, you know, and talking it through with the two of you, I think really was the emotional support that I needed to work through everything. So you can find me on social media at Liana Boras, LianaBoras. Mike and I just recorded the RHAP B&B for this season of Big Brother, so the BB B&B, which was a lot of fun. We got into some social media stuff and some cameo stuff, which was really just enjoyable. And you can also find me on the live feed updates for Big Brother on Saturdays. And I will be joining Shannon, not this week, but next week to talk about Australian Survivor. So I'm very much looking forward to that as well.
Yes, and that was one of my main things to plug as well, but you know, that's great.
She is like when you steal her plugs, Liana.
No, I know. I know Mike did the honor of passing it to Shannon, but sorry, I'm a little bit more selfish.
No, that's fine. You're the guest. You brought me the Biostrath history. You're entitled to do that. But Mike, what are you, the birthday boy in Australia right now, the time that really counts, what do you have going on in the podcast world?
So I am, like Liana said, doing some Big Brother coverage in terms of podcasts. I would say, if you haven't checked it out yet, if you're a fan of the direction we went in with the Biostrath Variety Hour, that's pretty much the mood of the B&B week in and week out. We go to very silly places and we have so much fun doing it. So be sure to check that out. I've also got Exit Press going on every week for Big Brother. But I am very, very excited to announce a project that Josh Wigler and I have launched on Post-Show Recaps, an episodic deep dive into Lost. It's been nearly 15 years since the season first hit the airwaves, it's a show that's really important to both Josh and myself. We are going back week by week, episode by episode through this show. It is a daunting task. It is probably the most ambitious task I've taken on in my podcasting career, and I could not be more excited. We put out a preview show this past week, and we are getting ready to record our thoughts on the two-part pilot coming up as well. So if you're a Lost fan, be sure to check it out. If you're watching it for the first time, this is a big spoiler-filled podcast, so I would recommend you watch as much as possible before you check it out. But yeah, I'm very, very excited to start a new decade of podcasting with a really big project like that.
What a birthday gift for us all. So, you know, you can always follow us at Liana Baris, at A. Mike Bluntite, at Shannon Gates. I'll let you guys work out who is who in that. And yeah, Australian Survivor is the thing that I'm doing at the moment. You know, currently still 3 episodes a week. Not sure when that's changing, but really just enjoying the ride and not having a life. So last week I had the great Jackie Glazier on the podcast. That was a lot of fun. This next week I have the great Rob Sestanino, which will be great. Also doing exit interviews, and as Liana said, after that, I'm going to have Liana on. So I'm just really pumped up about who I've been able to speak with about the show. You know, if you want to listen to that, and also this podcast, Survivor South Africa, subscribe to the International Survivor Hap-Ups feed, because that is where both of those podcasts are. It's super convenient, and also, you know, Australian Survivor is super fun. So if you haven't dived in, somehow you've missed, like, 100 episodes in the last 4 weeks, but you can still catch up, and you definitely should, because it's really, really fun. But Liana, until I talk to you next week, thank you so much for being here. I had a lot more fun than I thought I would be from how sore my eyes were from rolling them so much. So I can only thank you and Mike for that.
Of course, you're welcome. Anytime.
Yes, and next week, as we've announced. But thank you guys so much for listening as well. Thank you to Liana again. Thank you, Mike. Happy birthday. Thanks to Scott St. Pierre behind the scenes. And we will see you, Mother Jockers, next week. Bye.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.